mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, we're going to have our maiden voyage interview with Michael Tsarian, very prolific, gets into a lot of controversial subjects, but what he can certainly document is what the elite believe, what their mindsets are, the type of bizarre occultic activities that they are into. And he will be joining us coming up in 2 hours from now, for 2 hours. We do have a surprise guest joining us in an hour and a half. I'll leave it at that for you. Somewhat of a investigative report we'll be doing, somewhat of a hostile interview. That's coming up in an hour and a half. Yesterday, I plugged several times that I had a big guest on Wednesday, and then I kept saying I was going to plug it later, and then I would forget. And when I came back from a break and get into other issues, that was not by design. So I will tell you now who is on the show for 2 hours tomorrow. That is Peter Joseph, the creator of Zeitgeist, first edition, second edition, and then now addendum to the prolific three-hour film Zeitgeist. Then he pared it down to 2 hours. Then there was another new version he put out called Addendum that gets into the money system, which is excellent. I agree with it. And then it gets into some things at the end calling for global governance this utopia with the machines. And so it's not going to be a adversarial interview tomorrow with Peter Joseph, the creator of Zeitgeist. I know Kevin Booth knows him. They've been at some film festivals together and won awards together. And Kevin says he's a really nice guy. And it's a paradox with Zeitgeist. And then, of course, the addendum that came out a few months ago. It's a paradox because I agree with so much of it, and then I disagree with a minority of it. And then I come out and criticize it only because some of the things that are said in it have been also been put out with the New World Order from another perspective. And then some of the people that are followers of it, I think it's safe to say it's a cult following. I don't mean as in a David Koresh cult, as the media said it, but, you know, Road Warrior is a cult film. You know, it has a tight-knit, large but still not majority audience that just loves it and watches it over and over again. Star Wars is a cult film, but it's international cult. So I mean that in the kindest sense of the term. It's just that, I criticized part of the film as unrealistic and potentially dangerous in the ways it could be expressed. And some people then, cultically, got very, very upset with me. But come on, the Zeitgeist crowd always hates me. Because, you know, I've been raised a Christian. I know there's a spiritual world. I've had personal experiences. And I don't think scientists have discovered everything, and that the end-all, be-all, you know, of the atheists and agnostics who sit up on their high mountain making fun of anybody who is into spirituality. And that particular fact that people attack Christians more than any other group. They don't so much mind Eastern yogis or Muslims, even for that matter, but it is Christians that are attacked, and it's so fashionable. You know, I talk about the dark occult a lot on this show, the dark forces that the New World Order is into, whether you believe it exists or not. The elite does believe it's going on and does believe they're channeling dark forces, and they certainly do horrible things on a mass scale. So I report on that from a secular perspective. Hey, they're doing mock human sacrifices. They're doing these different black magic rituals to take the negative energy they've put out and to put it onto the child they kill. I mean, that's black magic. And then I get attacked by all the pagan groups and Wiccans and the rest of it, you know, saying that I'm wrong to even be criticizing black magic and that I'm supposedly attacking them. So they're all following their own rigid orthodoxy and are militantly defending their religion as well. So I think it's very hypocritical.
From From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Michael Desarian joining us in about 2 hours. Surprise guest coming up in an hour and 22 minutes. Tomorrow, Peter Joseph, the creator of the film Zeitgeist, and I'm allowed under my First Amendment to criticize the well-meaning people in the film. I believe they believe what they're saying. They're talking about utopias of machines and eradicating the class system, because I understand human nature and how things operate. And there's talk of a global government, basically foreign by the people. You know, I'm sorry, I've read the United Nations plans where they talk about how they give us a phony right-wing version of New World Order, which has been George Bush the last 8 years, and then the counter to that in a false bipolar system, because it's all controlled by the same people, it's unipolar, to be the United Nations and other, quote, nations outside of the Anglo-American establishment. And so that's all I'm talking about. And yes, I'm fully aware of the technological revolution and the fact that people don't need to dig ditches anymore. And the fact that machines will empower us and give us more and more leisure time. And I'll assure you, the elite are aware of that. In Endgame 1.5, the hour and a half addendum to Endgame, the DVD, you know, the DVD has 40-something minutes of extras, so it's over 3.5 hours on the DVD. But then we did an hour and a half for PrisonPlanet.tv members. That's up there in super high quality, but it's since been ripped and posted with our blessing. We love it. All over the web. I mean, you can go watch him read from official university studies, official Pentagon studies, where they said in the 60s, the machines are going to come online. They are going to separate the need for human labor. They're going to displace human jobs. The public is going to become decadent and corrupt. We are going to further that and accelerate that and supply them with drugs. We are going to do all of this and give them ball games and entertainment. And the question is, do we go ahead and just have one-child policies and phase out their numbers? Or do we have controlled plagues that are released, that are race specific and general, attacking all groups of Homo sapiens sapien? And so that's the whole point of what this show is about. We're discussing what the elite are saying and doing, and then I see a film in the last chapter saying basically, oh, we're going to have a utopia of the machines, and it's going to empower humanity, and everything's going to be wonderful, and we're going to have a global government. And then I know the New World Order at the United Nations level, the Club of Rome, the CFR, they've all been pushing that as well at the highest levels. I mean, you can watch hour-long press conferences with Walter Cronkite in the 80s saying basically the exact same thing. The problem is they're saying it's going to be wonderful and loving, but I happen to know that what they're building is not wonderful and loving. It's a giant meat grinder. And Bill Joy, in 1999, the owner of Sun Microsystems, chairman, multi-time billionaire, top engineer, genius, he goes to a globalist conference with 200 top IT owners, and he came back freaked out saying, my God, I thought the Unabomber was a kook, but actually everything he said was true about how they're going to build a technological structure, a superstructure above the population, and how they're going to basically exterminate the majority of the population. My God, it's true. Theodore Kaczynski was right, and that's why he basically did what he did, desperately targeting key corporate heads, trying to stop it. And thinking that if he did something like that, it would draw attention to it so people would find out. Who was Kaczynski? High-level CIA analyst, ran CIA mind control programs, was first in a CIA mind control program, MK Ultra and other secret programs from 1964 to 1969. Oh, yeah, the top mind control men go through mind control themselves. By the way, that's the LA Times about him being in mind control. And so Kaczynski was high-level technocrat at the university level at Harvard and other schools, and he was let in on this, and it flipped him out, ladies and gentlemen. He said, we're going to basically end the species. We're going to kill the majority of the people. And I'm not saying bombing them was a good thing. The point is that you could see Zeitgeist Addendum from the perspective of, no, they're saying, just like a firearm can be used for good or bad, and I agree, it's the idea of the machines and humans not having to work and bringing in this utopic system. The problem is corrupt, evil people always want the power. They always get control of centralized systems. By the way, if you really wanted to create the machine-based utopia, you'd have to actually be honest with yourself and analyze history. Would humans be happy in something like that? Would humans be able to maintain control of the machines? Would humans lose their humanity with the human-machine interface? Well, the transhumanists just say, who were founded by Julian Huxley, he said, eugenics is a bad name. I'm now calling it transhumanism in the 50s when he was the head of the UN, UNESCO program, and the Secretary General of UNESCO, and that's what happened. And then I tell transhumanists that, and they say, go to Hades, you lying Christian piece of trash. And I'm going, it isn't about that. That's why I, quote, have a secular show in that we just analyze issues. I don't want to wade in. I secularly look, and that means without God, I just analyze the cold hard facts. And then transhumanists say I'm a liar when it's a fact. Transhumanism was founded by the eugenicist and is crypto-eugenics. I mean, that's their statements, not mine. Endgame covers it. And they say that they're going to get the life extension technology. They're going to have the man-machine interface. They want to become this new life form, the super Homo sapien. But if you study the technologies, at least the way they're being implemented, it is to dominate humanity, enslave humanity, distract and divert, and dumb down humanity, and then reduce humanity. Bare minimum, sterilizing, one-child policies, if you can jump through all the hoops of the social workers, every facet of your life being micromanaged. I don't sit up here and put on the trappings of an intellectual and sit around, foppishly worshiping myself and, putting on the affected East Coast Atlantic elitist speech. But, I mean, if you really get down to it, we predict what's coming in the future. We understand the global trends. I mean, this is about as hardcore, focused, and serious, and on target as it gets. And I'm frankly tired of half-bit and two-bit intellectuals who are only in a narrow spectrum of analysis, who are so into their theory or their idea and their narrowly tailored worldview and system that they don't want to be told and they don't want to have it explained to them that what they're putting out is almost a carbon copy of the overall elite program. But what they're putting out is a sub-level, a mid-level management prospectus and ledger or manifesto for the lower level worker bees of the global socialist state controlled by the technocrats who really believe they're working towards some type of utopia, when if you look at what the results are of what they've created, it's hellish eugenics and dumbing down and extermination and mass murder. And so we should have a debate. And we should talk about empowering humanity to be able to have more liberty and freedom through the machine robotics mass assembly line system. We should be having a debate about reaching for the stars and trying to do that. But anytime you hear it needs to be centralized through global governance, anytime you hear about how it's going to be like Valhalla and easy, you just need to pull back and realize all the dangers. Because in the navigation towards something like that, towards a utopia, never reaching it, but towards it, there are great dangers. It's always those that call for utopias and claim they can deliver a utopia that deliver the greatest disasters. Instead of a global centralized system where everyone will suddenly get along with each other and no one will have armies or weapons. Oh, but there'll be that last army that disarms the last rogue nation. that won't give up its weapons to the global federation, and then you have that global police force to maintain the order and the peace, and that, of course, will be the dictatorship. You could have angels running it. You could have a good dictatorship that really did it through altruistic aims, which, of course, it's not. The current crew that set all this up is totally evil. But let's just say they had angels running it. Within a few years, if not sooner, you would have evil people overthrow that central directorate. And then you would have tyrants in control of the levers. So you must devolve the levers down to the people and create true diversity. If you want to go for a utopic, advanced machine, technological, robotic system, which uplifts man, it must be done at a tubular, local level, sector by sector, with the next sector voting to opt in and always having well-defined and celebrated powers to secede. And then you go community by community, self-directed, where it's not tied into a federal or international directorate, but where you have different choices and diversity on the type of free market communal systems that are created. And then that will develop a synthesis that will bring you a better system, more towards an ideal utopia, never to be reached. And then the places that have true free market and true community of purpose and true local sovereignty, they will shine, and then their models will be duplicated. And then you can have regional federations, but that takes a highly informed and involved population. Instead, we see a global government forming around corporate dictatorship and control, and they're moving to block the machine empowerment of man. I'll explain when we get back.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Finishing up what I was talking about, we're going to get into the news, and there's a lot of it on the financial end and the political. The global elite knows that even though they've suppressed a lot of technologies for more than 30 years, and that the technocracies of the world, dominated by the Anglo-American technocracy, have developed this technological system that is above the general society and sequestered and guarded by national security edicts and the giant national security global government state that's grown up. But still, alternative technologies, alternative energy, competing systems that do threaten their hegemony, their hegemon, their monopoly of power, are arising. And so that's why they need global government to suppress those technologies that will support a larger population and that will empower nation states and cities and counties and regions, and that will empower the individual. They are moving with global government to block the discovery of smaller governments, rogue governments as they're called, small research institutes and facilities, individuals. They are moving and expanding their move, they're moving for a long time, to bring in world government and world regulation to control that. That's why they set the precedent of how big your washing machine can be. Sounds reasonable, use less water. Or how much water your toilet uses. Sounds reasonable, sets the precedent. And then, oh, we're going to ban this type of light bulbs in 2010 in the U.S. and in the EU. Doesn't matter if they're filled with mercury and toxic waste, and if one breaks, you've got to call a hazmat crew. Doesn't matter. The people aren't going to be given that choice. Again, sounds reasonable. Now the precedent's set. They won't let you build a bridge across a tiny creek on your own property. Sounds reasonable. Now you don't have private property. Well, sounds reasonable to have a government agency that takes people's children outside of the normal court system and normal checks and balances you know, in the name of helping children, but really the main directive is by the social workers who in all the major textbooks say the family is a disease that must be eradicated. And we've read those quotes on air. There are hundreds of them in government textbooks, in policy. So the point is we have a group of vicious control freaks that are in control of the growing, expanding world government that's no longer embryonic, but is now toddling along on its feet and is growing strong and taking more power under itself through this controlled terrorism, controlled financial collapses, which then centralize even more wealth and control in their name and sets them up again as the saviors to direct planetary finance over any nation. And so they are moving to block a true technological revolution. They are moving to control technological developments that have been seized by the private industry and the public. And they do not have total control, but they are moving for total control through this technological grid. So the entire bent and the entire design of our modern technological system has been designed to dehumanize, to track, to trace, to categorize, to sociologically and psychologically study human behavior and craft the propaganda, the culture, the media to further divide and conquer and dumb down the population. And so the way world government has been built, the way it has been designed, the way its architecture has been constructed, its foundations, and all that has been built on it is about a monopoly of power, a disarming of the people, a taking of private property of the middle class to transfer it to the elite with howling mobs of socialists cheering it on, believing that they're going to get a piece of the pie and, quote, not have to work. And that's what you see being set up. You know, Donald Trump coming out today and saying, I love socialism. But it's not socialism, fascism, socialism. These terms are too limited. They are too tainted semantically. What the public believes they mean isn't what they historically are or what they were developed to do. They are developed to centralize power. And power that is centralized always is destructive from the onset or becomes destructive. And then there's the whole argument, is this pure technological system good for humanity? I mean, people 20, 30 years ago, before the calculators became popular, could add and subtract and engage in other forms of mathematics much better. Now people can't. And before we had television or before it became popular, people talked to their neighbors and were involved in their communities. Now that's gone. So we see the design and implementation of technology being an overall destructive force on humanity. We'll be right back.
Ira Hayes, call him drunken Ira Hayes, he will answer.
All right, welcome back.
Not the whiskey drink.
Finishing up with my discussion of technology, we'll talk about it more tomorrow in your discussion with the creator of Zeitgeist Addendum, Peter Joseph. That should be interesting.
There's a story I would tell.
Get out there on the web and let the Zeitgeist fans know that they'll get to hear my perspective on it. It's always good to have an open mind and you know, have discussions and debates about things. Finishing up with technology, you see, it isn't that a cell phone in and of itself is evil. It's that they knew in the 80s when they deployed them, and there were studies, and we've covered those on air, that it was causing cancer in lab rats. And now there are literally more than 1,000 studies from universities and governments all over the world and in the United States saying, yes, a massive increase in brain tumors with substantive long-term 10-year use of cell phones. I mean, they have 10 and 20-year studies on this. And so am I a troglodyte? Am I someone who's afraid of technology? No, I love technology. It is neutral. It is how it is used. And so deploying that technology, it was known it was bad, and they just didn't care because they knew how profitable it would be. And MIT and others reported they knew it would be a great system to track and trace and tax the public. And that's what happened. Now, what do they do with the cell phone? They use it through satellite triangulation to the cell towers to track everywhere you go under Homeland Security. Act of 1996, the Telecommunications Act. And yes, folks, Homeland Security was first discussed in 1993. By the time they get around to telling you about something, it's already been around generally for more than a decade. It's like I told you, your driver's license was already a national ID card. I had the executive order from 1993. It's in my film from 1997. And I said, your license will still say Texas or Utah or Montana or Florida, but it will be nationalized. And then in 2000, it was internationalized and is already standardized worldwide in a worldwide database based in Brussels, another one in Zurich. And it all nexuses in with the Social Security administrations of the world. And they all have it under different names. It's all standardized. We have Head Start here. It's called Sure Start and Secure Start and similar names in Australia, in England, and in Canada. It's all the same. It's globally standardized. And now they're announcing in England and in Europe and in the U.S., hey, we're going to go ahead from Texas to Washington State, California, Portland, the city, and then the state of Oregon are really advanced, to make you take a cell phone modem in your car and then tax you by the mile. And they admit they're also going to track everywhere you go with that system. And as we told you a decade ago, we read the federal grants for it. It first went in Indiana and in Texas and then in New York and then in New Jersey and then in California. Cameras that the feds paid for, that they claim were for traffic, but now you notice in the last month they've announced, oh, we're tracking every car in real time and putting it in a database for at least 6 months everywhere you go and everywhere you travel, everything you do, everywhere you stop. And they announced it in a whole bunch of newspapers in the last month. They're now introducing it to the public. Kind of like last year, they announced, oh, guess what? Your driver's license is really a federal ID, standardized, and most states implemented it years ago. See how that works? And they're putting scanners that scan your body, create a naked image, a bare image of your body, put in a hard drive database, and now they're putting those on the street corners, and now they're going in the schools and face scanning cameras that scan your face. And they brag, oh, the face scanning cameras, they are scanning through the same cameras that are also scanning your license plate, because the camera isn't really scanning. It's going back to a computer system that does off the digital camera. So it can do multiple things. And it is tracking everywhere you go and everywhere you do. And when they get a positive on somebody they're watching or somebody they're tracking, they will double check it as a nexus point with the car you get into. And is that car registered to you? Because they say the cameras right now are about 99% accurate of, okay, that's Tom Jones, or that's John Doe, or that's, Janie Sixpack. But let's make sure that's a positive ID. Is she getting in a car that matches her or matches someone in her family or in her larger circles of friends and connections? And then they instantly scan the plate, and the computer with an algorithm pops up and says it's definitely Janie Sixpack because it's a 99% face scan ID. And now they're integrating the walk of Janie Sixpack. See, the cameras ID your face, they ID your car, and then they have the computer technicians and the computer experts and algorithm engineers at MIT, at the NSA, at the private agencies that are doing the data mining, integrating it. And so, you know, you say, well, how do they learn Alex Jones's walk on the street? My gorilla-like stumble. How do they assess that? Well, they already have the face scan. They already have the license plate scan. They already have the ID number attached to my GPS tracked. Now, again, not GPS on the phone, GPS triangulated by the cell towers. They nexus all of that together and see, now they can follow me as I walk down the street, and the computers automatically have it logged in. This is admitted at the NSA to automatically keep adding new algorithms to it, so now they have the positive ID on Alex Jones's walk. And people say, well, how would they get your walk? Well, they already know it's Alex Jones for my face. They already know it's Alex Jones for my cell phone. They already know it's Alex Jones for my license plate. They're scanning now, and they add the uploaded data, the new data, the upgraded data of my walk. Then they add to that with the computers, triangulating my walk, my cell phone, my car, my face scan. Now they have satellites on persons of interest, scan in, wait for me to get out of the car, and then get a read on my biometric signature from above, the shadow I cast, and the gait of my movement with my walk, and then they get 100% ID on that. Now they can track me from satellite above by the simple way I walk. And that's the Manhattan-style super technology that Bob Woodward's talking about. That's the real one, is that they can scan faces now, even if you cover your face off the heat signature of your face in a crowd and have a drone fly by if you were in a football stadium with 100,000 people and shoot you, kill you, or send in a SWAT team on you. They also even have heat signatures on individual makes and models of cars down to the very car. After they know that's your car, they can get a heat signature from a drone or a satellite or a tethered blimp and track you with that. This is all admitted, ladies and gentlemen. So that's the technological grid and control system that they've set up, and they're always upgrading it. They're adding to it. They don't just know what you watch on TV through your TiVo or digital cable box. They don't just know that. No, my friend. They now know what you watch, and those shows are digitally scored, psychologically scored into a psychological algorithm. The ads are scored nationally, and detailed psychological breakdown on your personality type is also stored. That wasn't enough. A year and a half ago, Google announces in a press release they're using the cameras and microphones built into all the new computers, on most old computers, to physically watch and listen to you in your home, what you're listening to on the radio, not just what you're doing on the computer. And they use the example of your dog's barking. Now they know how to have dog food ads flash up on the computer. And they said, don't worry, a human isn't watching you. A AI computer system is. So that's how advanced this technological elite is. That's what we know about. And all over rural areas, billions of dollars have been spent in the United States and in Europe and in England to put little robotic cameras on tiny cables that have charging stations that they go back to every few hours in the trees. They've put them in Austin. When you hear about it, you'll hear, oh, some cameras were put up in rural areas to stop dumpers. But all Pentagon design, all hooked into Northcom, all hooked into the NSA, grids of cameras, not just at every street corner in rural areas, but now on parkland and national parkland and state parkland. Little drones buzzing along on wires, in some cases 5 miles long. I remember in 1998, they announced in the paper in Austin, and I went and looked at the company's name up online. They called it gunshot detectors, but when you actually looked at the grant, it was microphones. They put up over 1,000 microphones, last time I checked a few years ago, in Austin, that are shotgun mics that listen to you at up to 200 yards away, everything you're saying. You say, well, we don't have the personnel to listen to all that. NSA computers are recording for keywords what you say and do. That's all out of 1984, ladies and gentlemen, where Winston and his girlfriend, you know, you have to be authorized to even be able to breed. They run off to the, you know, a little woodland area. And of course, that's the area that's even more surveilled with microphones. So no expense is spared, because it isn't about money for the elite. They print and issue the money. It's about control. They're already in control. They want even greater, more hyper-dominant control. And of course, it's all unconstitutional. It's all illegal. So the point is, the architecture of the technological upheaval has been done from a wicked, malevolent, controlling, dominating position. And it's so shocking to people to learn that governments throughout history, whether it was the Romans or the Aztecs, it didn't matter. More often than not, they would just go into a captured people and kill everyone, or maybe take a few of the women and children back if they needed them for labor, or slaves, or for sacrifices. And, you know, the Israelites in the Bible, you know, going in and wiping out entire areas, killing everybody in an area. That is what real warfare is about. That is actually a human hyper-dominant instinct. And so, of course, the elite have created a world idea that humans are bad and humans are evil. And so if we kill them or use them or poison them, you know, it's only for the betterment. And they say, if you say to the elite, you know, it's horrible. Look at a six-month-old baby, how cute and sweet they are. Don't you have the instincts to love it and want to help it? How dare you want to shoot it up with inoculations of mercury or HIV or hepatitis to kill it? And they say, you are controlled by your primitive instincts. We are scientific and cold-blooded. And, you know, we are theosophic. And we understand that this is for the greater good of Gaia and spaceship Earth. And so as cute as that baby is to you, you're weak and fallen and profane because you don't understand the survival of the fittest strength that we have to be able to turn off our instincts to not want to hurt or kill that little innocent baby. You know, you're just an animal. You're just programmed to love that baby. And so you're weak because you don't want it to be killed or you don't want it to die or because you don't want to exterminate Africans. And I guess that's true. I am a human being. I am what my species was designed to be, what it's developed to be. I do care for others. I am tied into the larger universe. And I am not a cancer that viciously goes through like a buzzsaw, killing and destroying. But of course, those that claim that humans don't matter and humans are garbage and humans are a parasite and got to be exterminated, oh, they love the frogs and the birds and the bees and the flowers. And it's all wonderful and good. It's humans that are bad. No, as wonderful as the dogs and the birds and the horses are, humans are that much more wonderful. We're also that much more horrible. You know, there's a basic encoding for the life force. And so they know how to manipulate us cold-bloodedly and say, you don't want to soil your own nest. You don't want to hurt the earth. You don't want to toxify our environment. Let us have control. And as Peter Sanger said, as Richard and Haas say in their own public documents, the CFR Club of Rome, they say openly, the environmental movement is completely fake. It is about making humans the enemy and having the state organize against waging war against our own species, with the elite above us waging war against what is seen as Homo sapiens sapien. The elite, we told you about this in Endgame, and right after that it came out in the BBC and everywhere else, where they said, yes, the elite see themselves for over 150 years, and before that they did. You know, the Egyptians thought they were God. The Egyptian pharaohs. It's a sickness of elitism, a sickness of the power trip, of imperial gone-to-seed hubris to believe they're God. And they believe they're another species. They believe that they are, they have different terms for it, but basically a super Homo sapiens sapien, or an advanced hybrid Homo sapiens sapien that's about to go into rapid evolution with the machine-human interface. How do we know what humans were destined to become not going along this line? Or shouldn't we have an open discussion about, do we want to go down this line? Or do we know the ramifications of it? And again, the transhumanists are saying it's all going to be empowering and wonderful to be interfacing with the machines. But again, the very technocracy that's been built has been built to stunt and dumb down and control and narrow the vision and enlightenment of humans. And then they argue, well, we have to do that because we have to get world government first and use any means necessary to dumb people down so that our elite view, which is the best and the dominant, evidenced by them being in control, injustifies the means. We've got to be ruthless and cunning and evil and wicked and destructive, you know, beyond evil, as beyond good and evil, as some of the psychologists and psychiatrists have said. Skinner, you know, killing his own son, torturing him for years in a small cage. Small box. And he said, it's beyond good and evil. It's beyond good and evil I torture my son to death. It shows, and he was praised. Oh, he's a great cold-blooded scientist. He's a great researcher. He did it to his own son. See, they revel in that. And they are destroying the very basis of what it is to be human and all of our ancestors and our progeny to come, the past, the present, and the future. And it is the ruthless. It is the degenerate. It is the, I mean, look at who these elitists. Look at the art they're into. Skulls, death, maggots, blood, dead bodies, stench, darkness, destruction. That's what they're into. They clearly are aberrant and are malfunctioning like cancer in a body. And we are one group organism. There's no doubt about that. And my very programming, my intellectual outlook, my historical lens, the study, the experts we interview daily. I mean, I every day brainstorm in a college of discussion with all these different viewpoints and ideas with scientists and military people and common folks and just everybody, you know, trying to understand the world. I mean, daily, 6 days a week in a deep exercise of research and understanding. And I think a lot of people read a couple of books, claim they're intellectual, and then just say they've got it all figured out when they have no idea what they're part of in the controlled right paradigm, the controlled left paradigm, in the controlled transhumanist and posthumanist movements, in the eugenics movements, in the environmental movement. I mean, the evidence on its face, all the real environmental degradation is being accelerated. There's no movement to stop or curtail or restrict any of that. And instead, it's all about stealing private property, enslaving, controlling. They always dress it up in socialist terms, but it always goes to the elite. I mean, the facts are in. The facts are in. The species is in grave danger. And we're trying to save the species here. We think man's worth something. The central controllers always promise the domesticated slaves some goodies. Utopias, Valhalla, heaven. There's a lot of well-meaning people who are wedded to these ideas and can't pull out of it. Let's get into the financial news now. Europe puts more on the line for banks than the United States. Europe put $2.3 trillion on the line Monday to protect the continent's banks, a figure that dwarfs the Bush administration's $700 billion rescue program. No, Associated Press. Our media knew that it was wildly unpopular at $700 billion. In fact, the White House and others said in Congress, oh, it's really going to be a lot more, but we wanted to go with a number that was big but not too big for the public. I mean, they even tell the public how they lie to them, and that's done psychologically to make people who think they're part of the elite, and boy, there's a lot of those who aren't. You know, there's guys washing dishes that'll pipe up and tell you, you know, repeat what the establishment says like they're part of it. Well, we're doing this because, you know, the public wasn't ready for $5 trillion, which it really says in the bill. At least $5 trillion. So, you know, we just lied. You lied? You're part of the elite? And it runs the gamut from the dishwasher up to the guy who lives in a $1 million house and has a country club membership and waves at the former governor once a month and thinks he's part of the elite. It's disgusting. But see, I mean, that it's the propaganda. There's so many facets. It's a language of lying. We've become a lying nation, a lying world, where everything is spin, deceit, propaganda, delusion. You know, in our own patriot movement, there are people who manufacture how I'm involved with their life and how I'm doing this to them and how I'm doing that to them. And I'm always amazed to learn the new crimes I committed when I don't even know what's going on. You know, Alex Jones shut down this network. He's in control of it. And I'm like telling people that are involved with stuff, stay away from me. I'm not involved with any of that. I don't want to hear about it. Doesn't matter. I'm convicted. I run it all. I do it all. I'm a mastermind, you know. Again, just in my own life, it is a society falling apart. So see, how do I cover the news properly when one line I could rant about at the global level, not just the micro level? Europe put $2.3 trillion on the line Monday to protect the continent's banks, a figure that dwarfs the Bush administration's $700 billion rescue program in its most unified response yet to the global financial crisis after a stumbling start. So see, it's like, ooh, Europe put more on the line. There's a deception right there. They did not. That is not true. In fact, the United States, through the private foreign Federal Reserve, has pledged to actually be part of that $2.3 trillion bailout, but not just to Europe, to Japan, China, Dubai, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Israel, African nations, Latin American nations. The pledge by Britain and the six countries that use the euro helped soothe stock markets, along with a promise by top central banks to provide ultimate short-term dollar credits. I'm sorry, unlimited short-term dollar credits. So see, the United States is just saying, we're going to destroy our currency. But there's another lie in that first paragraph. What's happening here is very simple. They are shoring up the world financial banks with unlimited liquidity and capital for them when they've orchestrated all this, while cutting off credit. There's not credit going to credit cards and new houses and car loans and all of this. They're just amassing the final trillions unto themselves while turning off the spigot of capital to everybody else so that the real economy implodes, and then they are shored up and cash rich while the dollar still has value and the euro still has value to buy more infrastructure. Again, they blow us out, bankrupt us, and then make themselves flush in cash, which they then pass on to us as devalued later while they enjoy the short-term value while it still has it.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have a surprise guest coming up in 30 minutes. Then Michael Tsarian joins us for 2 hours after that. That should be interesting. If you don't know who he is, stay tuned. We're going to get into what the New World Order really believes, who they really are, from his perspective. Continuing with what's happening with the economy, Europe puts more on the line for banks than U.S., and then they lie and say the $2.3 trillion on Monday to protect the continent's banks, a figure that dwarfs the Bush administration's $700 billion. Well, again, Bloomberg and many other publications rightly reported it's $5 trillion or more. And then the White House even admitted, well, it's really more than that, but we wanted to just have a figure, you know, in there that wasn't too big but was still, you know, big enough to give folks an idea. What it is a blank check, unlimited. Like they said, oh, we're going to bail out these mortgages. And then, oh, by the way, we're just going to take stakes in private banks through the Treasury, giving the private Federal Reserve control. The profit is privatized to the bankers, but we just put our money in and they take it. That's their idea of the government taking a stake in it. And then the private banks take that money and they go out and they, quote, privatize, that is, buy off your politicians and have them hand over the water districts, the city roads, the infrastructure, the gold mines on government property that they would never let the citizens have. The IMF and World Bank, UN admits, they used all the phony environmentalism in the last 30 years in the U.S., the Rockefeller started conservation 100 years ago, to just lay that off use, because before the public could go find gold or silver or diamonds or you know, many other things in the ground and then stake a claim to U.S. government property, and it'd become their property. Not anymore, not in Alaska, not anywhere. You see, they've really restricted that. But it's all about monopoly. It's all about consolidation. Continuing, listen to this. This is scary. Icelandic shoppers splurge as currency woes reduce food imports. They're being told their currency overnight. See, smaller bites, the IMF and World Bank, OECD, International Bank of Settlements, that whole crime syndicate, the Organization of Economic Cooperative Development, the receivership bodies. If it's in Argentina, it's a first world nation, or in Iceland, a first world nation, but a smaller bite, they'll bring that sucker down in a week. The U.S. has got to be done. These things must be done delicately. So the Wicked Witch of the West said. After a four-year spending spree, Icelanders are flooding the supermarkets one last time, stocking up on food as the collapse of the banking system threatens to cut the island off from imports. We have had crazy days for a week now, said Johannes Samari Olfundsson, manager of the Bonus Discount Grocery Store in, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, Main Shopping Center. Sales have doubled, he said. Then it goes on to say the currency is also being devalued. You see? And you wait. I mean, just like gold is selling on average about, and there's mainstream news articles we have links to up on InfoWars and PrisonPlanet.com right now, where gold's going for 200 plus bucks, in some cases even more. Silver's going for $3, $4, $5, in many cases even higher than what even spot silver is. And that's why the mints in the U.S., Canada, England, Germany are saying they can't produce any more Maple Leafs or American Eagles or Krugerrands. They've stopped. They're out of gold just to fill previous orders. They're done for months. They say maybe longer. They're done in South Africa. Gold's just everywhere there. About a third of the world's gold comes out of those mines. And why? Because those are government. Those mints. And if the spot price says it's $840, well, they can't buy it for $1,000. That's how the laws are written. So, see, all reality has been lost. So the gold is physically running out, and it's harder and harder to get it. We'll come back, finish up with the economy. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Icelandic shoppers splurge as currency woes reduce food imports. Their banks are shutting down. They can't get their money out of the banks, and their money's being devalued in hyperinflation. It's the same system, same banks, same private families all over the world. Globalists already control more than 75% of true assets on the planet. They created a wall of, quote, liquidity that was really debt. The public was sold that debt was actually wealth. You know, they told you that on all the financial shows. They got everybody set up. Now they're pulling the rug out from under and then ordering the parliaments and Congress to hand over dictatorial governmental power to the private banking families in what is being called, on the Drudge Report and the Wall Street Journal and every other major publication, a new world order. They're even letting you know, hey, you don't want to have the private banks take over? How about martial law? And they terrorize the public and say, you won't be able to get a housing loan. You won't be able to get your paycheck. You won't be able to get a car loan. But they're not turning on any of those frozen credit markets. They are mashing capital unto themselves and using the implosion of the real economy in Main Street to destroy private corporations and companies in the real economy, driving down their earnings, driving down their stock prices, so the private banks that control the fiat currency can come in and snatch them up and buy them up. So they're capitalizing right now, building up a giant war chest for a final buyout of imploding real economy companies. And it's only going to intensify in the next 3 years. Not just Main Street or your job or where you're going bankrupt, but companies going bankrupt, industries going bankrupt and being consolidated, and other real financial institutions, even a lot that are, quote, healthy, are having their credit frozen where they can't operate. And then the federal regulators come in and shut them down and force them to be handed over to larger globalist banks for having, you know, minor violations in the myriad of regulations. The regulations are written where if you have as much as a smudge of dirt on your face, you know, a crooked toenail, as they say, you're going to prison. It's over. But see, it's all selectively enforced. The big central banks can do whatever they want. They can openly have a team of Goldman Sachs people only handing hundreds of billions over to Goldman Sachs in front of everyone. That's fine and dandy. They can have all these big insurance companies like AIG criminally certify toxic debt as AAA gold, rated as gold. That's where the gold rating comes from, you know, as good as gold, U.S. government backed, and sell it and then sell it again and again and again and again and use it as assets to leverage in banking and then loan out 10 times the money on the back of that crap. While they took the money out and bought real assets and then now leave us holding the bag, terrorizing the public, but it didn't work. But again, the public isn't in control. The public isn't running anything. They just need to keep the illusion going that the public was sold. If you watch the financial shows, they say over and over again, the American people are coming together. The American people are sticking together. Americans stand up and come together when stuff gets tough, and so is Europe. World leaders coming together. World financial leaders coming together. To save this world economy, it's good to see folks come together. But in every poll in Europe and every poll here, 90%+ against it. People know it's a fraud. They know it's a scam. If they had any idea how bad it was, I can't imagine how mad they'd be. If 90-something% are already against it, imagine if they had any idea really how serious it was. But it's all about that illusion that the people are going along. That illusion that it isn't a banking dictatorship. But a lot of financial publications, they admit, oh, yeah, the head of the Exchequer and the head of economic policy in England, he's a financial dictator. Oh, yeah, Paulson's a dictator. Oh, yeah, Bernanke's a dictator. Oh, they are setting up a world dictatorship over banking because, see, we can't have people offshore selling these derivatives. It's their fault when the globalists are all offshore. We've got to have a global government to globally regulate to stop this ever happening again. When they close the doors and premeditatedly close the loopholes for citizens to get their money out of the country in the last 2 years, as the globalists all moved out before that, as they change the laws where it's very hard to declare bankruptcy for an individual, but easier for these corporations. So it's a criminal select group of Fortune 500 that are owned and controlled by the private, less than 20 families that own the Federal Reserve and Bank of England. And I know you know this, but folks, we better get this information out to everybody we know, because the public has got to get this fast. They've got to understand this fast. They've got to understand how this scam works quickly. Again, when do banks, quote, make money? Well, they issue, through fractional reserve banking, imaginary loans. And that is only debt, so their currency is debt. What do they want? Farms, ranches, companies. What do they want? Controlled implosions, depressions, recessions. So that's when they consolidate. That's when they bring the nets of fish in. But in this case, they're going for broke because they're energizing their war chest to buy up the depleted, devalued, broke-back economy, exactly as the IMF and World Bank documents state. They go in, they buy off a country, they have them sign deals to take over the resources if they default, they openly tell the country to default. Then they go in and, quote, privatize in a 100-plus-part plan. Then the economy really starts breaking down. They double and triple commodity prices and travel cost and water cost. Then the economy starts sinking. They use the media they own to put out bad news to further depress it. Then they tell the government, okay, inflate your currency to pay us back. When the money's still worth something in the first part of that scheme, in the final phase, they buy up more real assets with it. Then they let everybody know the currency's been devalued overnight. The economy completely implodes, and whatever they didn't own to begin with, they come in with foreign currencies and buy up the rest of it. Mechanized precision. And they're doing it now in Iceland. Government moves again to unclog credit lines. Oh, we need more power, more money, more insurance companies, more banks, quote, bailed out. That is being given U.S. dollars. And remember, you know, they claim with these formulas that banks may pay some of this back, but they're going to pay it back in inflated dollars to begin with, and you're going to pay the taxes on those debts. Former Fed chief says U.S. now in recession. Oh, like I need Federal Reserve former Chairman Paul Volcker to tell me we've been in a recession when we've been in one for 3 years. That's like telling me the sky's blue today. Oh, thank you, Paul Volcker, for telling me. Oh, that was like when they went into Perino, the White House spokesman a few months ago, and said, is it true the dollar's devalued? Is it true it's dropping? Can the White House tell us if that's true? She said, I'll be fired if I tell you what I know. I can't tell you. And they said, well, jeepers, creepers, we don't know then. We're like three-year-olds. It goes on. Feels like socialism, but I like it, says Donald Trump, CNBC. While the global plan to recapitalize banks will probably be bad for the business, driving prices higher at a time when he has the cash to buy it is necessary and smart, real estate developer Donald Trump said Tuesday. I mean, Donald Trump's a pimp, a nobody, a front man. This guy's nothing. We were headed for Great Depression number two, Trump told Squawk Box. As a free market capitalist, Trump admitted, feeling uncomfortable with the artificial injection of cash into banks, but he said it was a much better idea than the original plan just to buy up distressed assets. It's almost socialistic. It's almost socialistic? This isn't socialistic. It's robbery. But I like it. Really like it, he said. You can go watch the video of it. This is absolutely amazing. And then we've got Brown, uses crisis to create a new financial world order. That's from InfoWars.net. We have a link to the video clip of Brown saying it. That's up on InfoWars.net. Gold advances in London as dollar declines. Platinum also rises. So you have the gold rising in other markets around the world, but artificially kept at about 8:40 here in the United States. And again, I wanted to bring Ted Anderson on for this segment, the next, to explain this. Ted, in layman's terms, you've been in gold brokerage for 30 years. Explain to people how you can have gold going for a couple hundred dollars more than what it shows in the paper market, and why this manipulation is finally being exposed in mainstream media.
Well, it's like you go back to the GATA litigation. What has occurred is that most of the central banks, very smart by them, have accumulated the largest reserves of gold in the world. And the reason why they did it is because central banks don't trust each other for their currency. Each one knows that the next one can just print as much as they want, so that's worthless. So they have to have something that is real for collateral when they're trading amongst each other. And so they will accept gold as collateralization. Plus, also, now they have this big supply of gold, and so they become the biggest lenders of gold. They hold the key to the lease rate for gold, which is the amount of money that it costs in order to borrow gold to sell it in the futures market short. Well, they're selling it short right now, and that's what's pushing the prices down, and they're manipulating it that way. Every time we have a hit on our economy, they know they have to bring the gold prices down, because if they allow that to skyrocket, then what's going to happen then is people are going to run from cash, which is what the banks need in deposits.
But it's not working anymore. They're trying to suppress the gold price when in reality it's at around 950 to 1,000 in some areas, even more. And then now the mints can't buy gold because under government rules they're only allowed to buy it at what supposedly paper spot gold is. And so now this smokescreen, this hologram, is really being exposed.
Well, it is. And actually, that does not translate to supply. The physical supply for gold is so short right now. The last time I tried to get a price on U.S. Eagles, it was over $100 over an ounce. It used to be about $20 to $25 an ounce to buy U.S. Eagles. Now it's close to $100. I was looking at Coronas. They're at $70 over spot. That's the craziness that's going on in this marketplace. The physical supply of gold is so short in supply that things that normally trade for just a little bit over spot are trading for prices that, you know, by the time you buy it, you're paying $150 over spot. It's, you know, so there's no relativity between what's going on with the spot price of gold and what's actually happening in the physical supply of gold.
Well, what's happening is the velvet glove is tearing. It's coming unwound. We're seeing the iron fist as the velvet rips away, and it's illustrating to even the mainstream media's reporting that it's totally manipulated, and they've got to do that. We'll talk more about it when we get back. The new world order is depressing the world economy while having the private central banks that control most of the governments of the world transfer tens of trillions of dollars of fiat currency into their holdings to buy up the stock market and buy up other financial institutions. This is only part of the ongoing operation. The last phase was pumping up world markets, securitizing debts. Okay, Ted, you're a major gold and silver broker. You are fighting. Most brokers, most places are out of gold or have insane premiums. You don't, because you have connections all over the world. Tell folks what it's like right now.
It's really hard to try to find any product of any significance right now. I still am able to, I mean, when things dropped here down to that 830 range, I took on another position of francs and British sovereigns, just knowing what was going on. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve System pledged to give as much money to the European central banks as they need. There is a carte blanche. That means, in translation, that they're taking the value of your savings that you put away and transferring it over to these European banks so they can bail out their problems. That's all it is. If the Federal Reserve System prints money and gives it to them, they spend that money into the system, brings down the value of your savings. They might as well have just came in and took a piece directly out of your savings. It's a tax, and it's a tax without representation. And bottom line is, commodities will rise because of it. You just simply cannot trust the bankers. They're going to do whatever it takes to save their problems and their situation and their companies at the cost of you.
Anybody? But this false reality is breaking down. Gold's up $7.10 today to right at 840, but that isn't the reality number. Gold selling at 950 to 1,000, but you happen to have gold at the delusional number. Ted, explain how you're able to get it at the delusional number when almost no one else, including the mints, can.
Well, and when the federal government and all these different governments go in and they join together the G7 to suppress prices, they're creating an opportunity for people like me who know where to get it and how to buy and get stuff at a price that's reasonable. Right now, I was able to drop my franc price. It wasn't much, $4, but still, when gold goes up, and we'll see gold closer to 900 again very soon, I'm sure of it, and that price is going to look really attractive. Now, obviously, when I sell out of that supply, I'm going to have to continue to try to buy, but I try to buy as hard as I can.
Well, all the mainline analysts are talking about $2,000 an ounce gold the next year, regardless if that happens or not. We know they're devaluing the currency. Gold and silver is the place to be, and Ted gets this stuff in. It's put in a bank vault there in town, and then it ships out, you know, the day after it comes in. He has it there in the local bank in Minnesota. Ladies and gentlemen, it ships out. It's where I get my gold and silver. Hardly anybody else even has it, and if they do, it's way above what Ted's got. We only got about a minute and a half, Ted. Tell them the coins you've got and the offer.
Well, right now we're carrying the British sovereigns at the price of 234. Those are 239 before. We also have the francs at 190. Those are 195 before. I have a very good supply of Franklin halves right now at $8.70.
That's a silver half dollar.
Yeah, it's a silver half dollar, and I can tell you right now, you can go shopping for silver. You're not going to get any quantity of silver at a price like that anywhere. And then, of course, you're right. The gold prices are going up today, and the stock market took an increase today and then took a big plunge. And here's what's going to happen. There's going to be more problems that are going to come up. The government's going to come up with more reasons to send your money overseas or even spend it right here on the corporation.
Look, the gold rush is happening. The yuppies are finally trying to get into gold, and that's why it's dried up, folks. Move on it now. Ted, tell them the coins.
Yeah, the coins are British sovereigns. They're the Franklin, the francs, the 20 franc at 190, and the Franklin half at 870. And you can call us at 1-800-686-2237. Again, it's 1-800-686-2237. And if you have currency, if you have it in the bank, if you got into 401k, if you're sitting there with annuities, you can all see what's going on out there.
By the way, you were saying a couple months ago that, you know, annuities are not backed, and finally the mainstream media is having to admit that annuities are not FDIC insured. I'm sorry if they told you that. They were lying to you. Folks, you're insane if you don't diversify into gold and silver, and this is a great deal Ted is offering. 800-686-2237, because you secured this deal yesterday. As gold goes up, how long can you hold this, Ted?
Well, I'm going to hold it until the supply runs out, but I'm guessing we'll be able to last at least till midnight tonight or even in tomorrow, depending upon how many people are buying. But anybody that has half a brain on their shoulders, I tell you, they should be moving now. There's no question about it.
800-686-2237. You know, Ted, this is scary. I mean, to really see, we knew this was coming intellectually, but to see it unfolding, it just blows me away.
Well, you know, we've been uncovering this for 12-plus years here, you and me together, and I can tell you, I've been doing it a lot longer than that, and it's, you know, finally, we're seeing something come around. I hope people have the sense to look back to the Constitution and not buy into this thing like Donald Trump is. I mean, that's crazy.
800-686-2237. They'll be there till midnight Central Standard Time tonight. 800-686-2237. Protect yourself. Get out of the New World Order's paper currency. Thank you, Ted. You know, I'm on 590 AM, one of our affiliates here in town, and I was driving along yesterday afternoon, and I heard a newscast about Austinites to be paid $800 and something to put a mobile phone system in their car to test taxation instead of being taxed at the pump for the fuel itself. I guess we're going to have that too, to test taxing by the mile. And I knew they'd done this in England. I knew they'd done this other parts of the United States are studying doing it. I know Portland's considering doing it. And so I thought that we would track down exactly where that was coming from. And he's Dr. John J. Cool. Not kidding. He is Dr. Cool. And he is a PhD in computer science, University of Iowa, electrical engineering, Iowa University, computer science, University of Iowa. And he's a specialist in digital systems, computer architecture, parallel processing, switching theory, design, and analysis of algorithms. And present research interest distributed in parallel computation, real-time simulation. We were talking about in the first hour, integrating all these systems. Well, he's one of those specialists, and he does work for MIT, you name it. The list goes on and on. And they're doing simulation for taxing via these mobile systems. Mobile phone is the platform in the car, and they're going to pay you to test this out and study it. So I thought we would have him on. Sir, thanks for coming on, Doctor.
No problem.
Tell us all about it and how many states it's going on in and what this means.
Okay, well, this is actually a federally sponsored study that is looking at the possible feasibility, and I would stress just the possible feasibility of some form of a mileage-based user fee system as a long-term, and again, I stress long-term, replacement for the current motor fuel tax or gas tax. So as part of this federal study, we're actually conducting studies at six different sites around, at various points around the United States, and Austin happens to be one of those six sites.
Tell us about the system.
Well, the system collects information regarding the number of vehicle, the number of miles, I should say, that a vehicle is driven within a given taxing jurisdiction, and a taxing jurisdiction in this context is typically a state boundary, nothing more fine-grained than that. I want to stress, you know, right up front, the system does not track people. It does not record any route information. It does not place the vehicle at any particular place or at any particular time. It merely records aggregate information about the number of miles traveled within the taxing jurisdiction and the associated charge rates for that. That information is then periodically uploaded via serial or a mobile telephone link, as you alluded to earlier, to a billing and dispersal center where a bill would be calculated, and then the money that was received or remitted would be apportioned back out to the appropriate taxing jurisdictions in accordance with the number of miles and the rates charged within those various jurisdictions.
And so you're paying people to take part in the study?
Yes. What people will actually do, there'll be 200 volunteers or 200 participants within the Austin area this year, and then next year we'll come back and recruit an additional 250 participants, so there'll be 450 all told. They'll actually have the onboard system installed in their vehicle. They'll live with it for a little less than a year.
Who runs the platform? I mean, who developed the software and the phone package relay algorithm integration system?
That was designed by us in conjunction with various subcontractors who work for us.
I'm just curious, who are the subcontractors?
There's a number of them, a number of different companies around the United States.
You're saying this is embryonic. They're already doing this in Europe and England.
To a certain extent, sort of different variations on the same theme. There's not a large-scale implementation of a pure mileage-based charging system at this time.
Yeah, let me stop you there, and I've actually read your reasons and the government's reasons for saying this is a needed system. I understand you're just deploying this to test it. You know, you're on the research R&D end. Here, beta testing it, but talking to you is like talking to 1,000 other people we've talked to. I remember John Hurt in 1997. It's up on YouTube. Head spokesman for TxDOT, and I went to him and I had the federal documents, and I said, "These cameras you're putting up, are they going to be used for law enforcement?" And he said, "No, TxDOT is non-law enforcement. It's for traffic and integrating and studying traffic patterns." But I said, "Ah, but separately in the Texas Department of Public Safety, the state police, it will be used for that." And he said, "Oh, you're a smart guy. Ought to be a lawyer." No, I shouldn't. I know how government works. They're going to use it for law enforcement. Now Homeland Security's announced they originally paid for it back when it was, you know, just, quote, the federal government. And now that's been taken over. And now they're putting face scanning software, license plate reading, tracking database storage, algorithms of your travel. I mean, everybody's being tracked all over the country. It's been in place nationwide for several years. And so you're saying it's no big deal, it's just a study, it's coming in the future, everything's fine, kind of like we heard about toll roads 5 years ago. It's just a study, no toll roads on existing roads, now they're all over the place. And then you also say, I want you to comment on this, this doesn't track you. Well, in the program of the gas tax, it doesn't, but it has the dual use, and they have caught them with transponders for tolls and other systems, and in London using people's cell phones to randomly, not even when they're under surveillance or targeted, but randomly tracking people's patterns, that a separate agency with dual use, or government group, or private group, can dial in under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, implemented October 1st, 2001, under federal law. All of them are GPS triangulated coordinated.
Well, you know, I certainly fully appreciate the significance of the privacy issue. You know, we have understood that this is an important issue, a fundamentally important issue for this kind of technology from the very beginning. As I said earlier, the system that we have designed is incapable of tracking people. It does not have the ability to track people. It does not collect and retain information that can be used for tracking people. So at least to the extent that the government would choose to implement the particular system that we're testing, that system is not prone to ulterior motives to be used for tracking people.
So it's this cell phone package, and that's basically what it is, a mobile phone, correct?
It's a cellular telephone, essentially a cellular telephone with an onboard GPS unit, global positioning.
Oh, so it's not just triangulating for the down to 15 feet national security rule of 96. You're saying this has onboard GPS?
Yes, it does.
And I guess because you're taxed at different times for higher traffic, as they're doing in Europe, or because on certain roads you're taxed at a higher rate, is why it has the GPS?
And different states track, you know, different states have different, currently have different state tax, gas tax rates, and presumably could have different mileage charge rates also.
So you're saying a GPS unit that has to be Telecommunications Act of 96 compliant, I mean, all of those have to be trackable by federal law. I mean, that's like saying you have a gun, and so the safety's on, and so you're unable to shoot somebody with it.
But well, let me say this. The cellular unit, which is in the vehicle, is not a cellular telephone. It's a cellular data communications unit.
Oh, I understand. You said it's GPS.
It is not subject to that particular law.
But it's over that. I mean, under the Telecommunications Act, it's only GPS triangulated. You're talking about an onboard GPS unit.
Yes, and that GPS unit does not retain or report any specific vehicle location.
In the way it's currently set?
It is in the way that the current equipment is designed, manufactured, and fielded. It is incapable of reporting that type of
thing. How does it not say where you are when it's taxing you per road?
It's taxing you per taxing jurisdiction, not per road. So in the case of the Austin study, it's merely taxing you on the basis of whether you're driving miles in Texas or Oklahoma or New Mexico.
Wow.
Or Mexico.
Yeah. You know, I remember having the head of the toll road system on about 10 years ago from San Francisco, and they were putting these smart transponder tags in, and them saying, oh, no, it's incapable of tracking you. And it turns out the feds and the state put up readers in areas that weren't toll roads and were tracking people. I mean, I've heard this a million times, Doctor.
Yeah, no, there's no question that that's being done, I think. And those are the kinds of alternatives that people are going to have to look at. I mean, you know, there's a couple of things that are clear, and that is that the gas tax is not going to be viable in the long run. By the long run, I mean a decade from now.
Because of fuel efficiency?
Because of fuel efficiency, switching to alternative fuel vehicles that are not subject to the gas tax, et cetera. So there will have to be a different way of paying for roads, and people are going to have to make hard decisions about what is the fairest way to do that. And certainly,
well, I have a question. I mean, we were using 15 million barrels a day 10 years ago. Now we're using 20 to 23, depending on the time of the year. And gross receipts are up, and there are ways to tax a fuel cell or to increase the gas tax if it did drop. It's not true that it's dropping. I mean, that on its face that the government's been putting out is incorrect. And then also to add to it, now that we couldn't just increase the gas tax, why have this I mean, I know in England they're using it for Big Brother, and they said 5 years ago it wouldn't be, and now I can give you 100 articles, sir, where they admit they're tracking people with these.
Yeah, the types of systems we're talking about in England are quite different than what we're talking about here.
Really? I mean, it's a GPS, a cell phone modem.
No, there is no such system in play in Europe, in England. The system, which I believe the system you're talking about in England is the, there are some commercial trucking systems that use GPS that are in Europe, England.
Doctor, you're a smart guy, but I think you're
Germany
incorrect.
Others. No.
They have license plate taxing readers,
yes,
transponder readers.
That's what I was saying. This is quite different.
They have cell phone platforms.
London has a system which is actually a cordon system where people actually pay congestion fee for being within the city, city of London. And you're absolutely right. That is a hugely invasive system that does include such things as cameras with license plate readers and et cetera. That is quite different than what we're talking about.
Well, sir, I know you're the expert. I want to give out your website and the phone number for folks that are listening or who want to learn more. But, look, here's the bottom line. Big Brother is all over the place. It's out of control. They're already nationwide scanning the plates, saving where everybody goes and what we do. We're already deep into this, and I've read the federal studies, the international studies, the Oregon studies, where you know it's most advanced there in California and New Jersey, and they say that they're going to tax you per road, per federal, per state, per everywhere, and that it is going to track where you're going. You're saying this system's different.
I'm saying our system does not do that. There certainly are proposals out there for many different types of taxing mechanisms, and many of those are much more invasive, have the potential to be much more invasive of privacy than the one that we're talking about. And these are all among the different, the difficult societal choices that people are going to have to make.
Well, societally, I've seen the polls, close to 100% don't want transponder taxes, don't want more taxes, don't want to be tracked and traced. And so societally, we don't have any say. 98% of us didn't want the bailout, and it happened.
Societally, though, we're going to have to make a decision about how we're going to pay for our highways. And ultimately, that's going to come down to making some hard choices. I'm committed to the fact that it is possible to build a mileage-based road user charging system that does not significantly invade people's privacy. I don't know if I can convince you of that. I probably can't convince you of that. But that's
why not have it where you pay at the pump? Why not just increase the price? But the government just loves to put little. Take the black boxes on cars that how fast you were driving, what happened when it went, and they use that against people. I mean, this is Big Brother society.
Well, paying at the pump or even increasing the gas tax is a good short-term solution. But one has to assume that, at some point, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, a significant number of vehicles, maybe even the majority of vehicles on the road, will not be gasoline, or at least solely gasoline-using vehicles. And so you have a taxing mechanism that no longer works for a significant number of vehicles on the road.
Why not just have it after a year? You go in, and the computer doesn't track where you went or what you did. It just digitally looks at your tachometer, how far you've gone. And then you're just apportioned a tax that way.
Well, the problem with that scheme is that it does not charge on the basis of where you drove the miles, merely that you drove the miles. And so,
but I thought you just said your system was just. I thought you just said your system was just for state by state.
Yeah. Well, but just you don't drive your vehicle solely in the state of Texas. You may live on the border between Texas and Oklahoma. You may drive half your miles in the state of Oklahoma and half of them in the state of Texas. So there needs to be a mechanism for fairly apportioning those fees back on the basis of where the miles
are. They can start taxing us right now with the license plate readers, but they don't want to announce to the slaves that this grid is in place. And you've been a cool character, Dr. Cool, but I got to tell you right now that, they told us the NSA wasn't spying on Americans. Turns out they're spying on the troops, citizens, everybody. We already knew that. We have foreign governments and banks basically strip mining us like the Chinese government was 150 years ago. And, bottom line, everybody's going to remember 10 years from now when they've got satellite GPS trackers taxing them and tracking them that we were here and we talked about this.
All right.
Well,
we'll talk again then.
Well, Doc, before you leave us, we got 3 minutes left with you. Tell us more about the program and how folks can learn more of the website.
Yeah, they can go. We have a study website, which is roadusersstudy.org. And they can go there and find out lots of specific information about the study. There's also contact information there for both telephone contact and email contact if they want to ask questions or just learn more information about the study.
Doc, what have some of your previous projects been?
Well, I've been an academic for 20-some years. I've done a lot of work with building driving simulators, looking at various types of transportation-related issues, highway safety, things like that. And then I also work in the general area of high-performance computing.
Well, you know, our entire economy is sprawled. It's based on the automobile, and the establishment knows that, and they know the biggest tax frontier is taxing transportation, and they mean to fund their entire system. We need to cut government and cut all these programs instead of turning all our cars into taxi cabs. And I'm sorry, the gas tax receipts are up year by year, and then as cars get more fuel efficient, you just increase the amount, and that's the fairest way without a bunch of tracker systems in your car. And I would just ask you to take your great research skills and, to move on to something else and to really come out against Big Brother and join us in the fight against the New World Order Crime Syndicate.
Well, like I said, we certainly understand and appreciate privacy issues and how important they are.
Well, you know, Northcom says all this is going to be used to control us. You know about Northcom?
Vaguely.
Go to the Army Times. Read about deployment of brigades to the U.S., incrementally training us for our receivership we're going into. Hey, but I'll see you after the revolution, Doc. Good talking to you.
All right.
Take care.
Yep.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, the GPS isn't going to track you. Oh, that guy was reading off a script. When Vladimir Putin nationalized a bunch of companies for him and his cronies, it was called criminal, and it was. Now the crutch running under him to do it, and it's hailed as good. Bottom line, I've had so many of those bureaucrats on in research and in government. They always say it's no big deal. It's hypothetical. It's coming way in the future. Even if it does, it's everything's okay. This isn't scary. This isn't bad. Let me acclimate you to it. Now they can dummy up their statistics and say, oh, we did this with volunteers. They loved it. So they're tracking you, they're controlling you, they're watching what you're doing, they're building their control grid. In fact, for over a decade, they declassified it last year, the Pentagon has these supercomputers with your name on it, even if you're not online, with basically like a Google system, but in the real world, every purchase, everything you're doing being tracked, no Fourth Amendment, and they have you in cyberspace. You know, basically a model of you, studying you, pulling up psychological charts on you. It's a control freak's paradise. You try to tell the slaves in the street that face scanning cameras are watching them, cell phones are tracking them, poison's being put in the water, they just giggle and laugh because they watch a literal weaponized mind control box every single day. They are mesmerized, they are put into a sleep pattern. We have to use the television as a weapon against them. That's why people need more than ever to get Terror Storm, A History of Government-Sponsored Terrorism, or Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, or Loose Change, Final Cut, or Fabled Enemies, Truth Rising. These are the best films out there on the New World Order and just how criminal these people are. Yes, the people running things kill us. They stage terror attacks. They're ruthless. Stop being simpletons. Stop acting like trusting children. Get wise. Get hip. And do it at InfoWars.com today. By the way, there's only a few hundred left of my book, 9/11 Descent into Tyranny. And when they're gone, they are gone. I think he said there's like 300 left. And when the last 100 go out, I'm going to number them and boost the price on them. Because it's kind of sad. I'm not going to reprint the book. Printed 10,000 and then 5,000 more. And when these are gone, the 15,000, I think it's 15,500 books total. Wrote the book 6.5 years ago, more than 6.5, almost 7 years ago. Wrote it in 2 weeks. People think it's a great book. It is. Pretty good. point is that it breaks down the financial system, the occultic system, the government-sponsored terror system. It's a good coffee table book, a good book to give somebody as a gift. Write another book right now. Much more detailed. But get 9/11 Descent into Tyranny at Infowars.com or any of the books and videos at Infowars.com or call toll-free to get them at 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139. And that does two things. The books and videos will wake people up. You may know all about it, but your friends, your family, your neighbors, your police chief don't. Buy them and put them in your library. This message has been carried to tens of millions, but we need to carry it to billions. And that means taking action, and people are more willing to listen and wake up and more receptive today than ever before. And then secondarily, your purchase of the books and videos makes everything we do here possible. This is not inexpensive. And we are dedicated to expanding our operations. We're building the TV studio right now, the new radio studio. I'm trying to be frugal. So expensive. So it's taking a little bit more time, but it should be done in a month. Then I got to develop it and do it. The point is, and is that going to save us all? No. But it's the right attitude. It's the right direction. I'm doing my part. You do your part. And I think we're some of the most effective folks at waking people up. But there's no doubt of that. Over 80% of people out there that you ask will say, who woke you up? And they'll say the Alex Jones Show or Alex Jones Film. And then we bring you on all these other guests. Don't agree with them all. The point is, we bring them here, and we have an open discussion about what's really unfolding. You know, that guest was saying, well, the people need to make a decision about this. The people have been removed from the decision-making process. We're illustrating that. That's a big part of the solution. All right, we'll be right back with Michael Tesarian. Stay with us.
He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back live here. We're transmitting over the AM and FM dial, global shortwave, the internet, satellite, and, of course, over PrisonPlanet.tv now for the next 2 hours. We're getting connected up with him in Europe, Michael Tesarian. Very interesting guest. We've never had him on before, but I'm familiar with his work. And I'll say this. I'm going as far with him as I can. You know, he's a character a lot like, you know, David Icke in that he's alternative in his, you know, views from kind of the mainstream of alternative media and research. But I think it's important work he's done and interesting and thought-provoking. I know this, what he's discovered about the elite, what the elite believe about themselves, what their mindset is very, very accurate from my own research of what they believe about themselves. Now, is it real? Or ghosts and goblins and all this real? The point is, the elite believe that they are channeling entities. They are into the occult. They do engage in Satanism and occultism. There are secret societies running our world. There is a new world order. And so as soon as we get him on the line, we'll bring him up after the break. Some of the other news that we've been covering today for those that just joined us is the fact that the U.S. private central bank, the Federal Reserve, has pledged unlimited dollars. Now, for a new dollar to be created, a debt is created, a dollar of debt that taxpayers have to pay back. So foreign banks, foreign corporations, foreign insurance companies are being flooded. We keep talking about hyperinflation. This is mega hyperinflation. This is intensified hyperinflation. This is, you know, every day, it's not trillions, it's the hundreds of trillions they're talking about globally flooding the planet with U.S. dollars and U.S.-backed government securities. And ladies and gentlemen, to pay those securities when they come due, the tax man comes a knocking at your door. So not only have these foreign international banks set up a system where they AAA-rated junk, or credit card debt, housing debt, and then sold it, the debt into the market as a premium investment, most of it international, the media is blaming it on the American people. We're certainly suckers, but a small part of it. And then now we're going to have to pay back all of this through income tax, and they're going to double tax us with hyperinflation, devaluing the currency. And I know I keep talking about that because this is the end of the economy as we know it. This will be just so devastating, it is hard to even imagine. Iceland, their money's being devalued very quickly. Their grocery stores have seen double the volume of shoppers as their banks collapse and as they may not, quote, be able to buy more food. That is out of the Associated Press and Bloomberg today. And the globalists, the New World Order crowd, did the same thing in Argentina. But I challenge you to go read the story. I have a link to it up on PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com. Icelandic shoppers splurge as currency woes reduce food imports. After a four-year spending spree, Icelanders are flooding the supermarkets one last time, stocking up on food as the collapse of the banking system threatens to cut the island off from imports. And food and things are exploding in price in England and Japan. Islands are particularly hard hit. We have had crazy days for a week now, said Johan Samari Olvensson, manager of the bonus discount grocery store. Sales have doubled, and it goes into the currency plunging, the bank shutting down, and that's going to happen here, but in slower motion. So the banks are shoring themselves up, so they're strong to buy everything up after they implode the markets. That's why you saw the financial terrorism of the world's leaders saying depression, depression, depression in the last 3 weeks. That is to drive markets down so they can destroy confidence and consolidate.
Lead from solder and copper pipes, mercury from fish, dental fillings, vaccines, arsenic.
Discount grocery store. Sales have doubled, and it goes into the currency plunging, the bank shutting down, and that's going to happen here, but in slower motion. So the banks are shoring themselves up, so they're strong to buy everything up after they implode the markets. That's why you saw the financial terrorism of the world's leaders saying depression, depression, depression in the last 3 weeks. That is to drive markets down so they can destroy confidence and consolidate. Our guest is in Europe right now. He was born in Ireland, and he has made a lot of films, written quite a few books, very prolific. And we've had a lot of listeners request that we have him on. I want to really get him to talk about the nature of his awakening, and then I wanted to just get into what we can prove with Michael Tesarian today about what the elite believe, and from his in-depth research, he's done a lot of great research, who the global elite are, what their driving mindset is. We know they have a kingdom of cults, a hierarchical pyramidal structure of power, but who is at the top of that pyramid, and from his unique perspective, what their agenda is. So we're really honored to have Michael Tesarian on with us for the next hour and 50 minutes. Michael, welcome.
Oh, thanks a lot, Alex. It's nice to be on. Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. It's great.
I'm a big supporter of your work, followed it from the beginning, and just want to offer you my, total congratulations, not only on your work, but the gutsy way that you've been doing it. And I just want to say to all your listeners out there, if we had more people like you and as gutsy as you to back up what you're talking about with action, we wouldn't be in the mess in America that, we are today. So I give you a lot of kudos for what you've been doing through the years, Alex.
Well, Michael, kudos to you. For some of my audience that may not know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself, your awakening, and then let's, strike a chord in the present with what the global banking structure is doing, your point of view, your perspective on what's happening there, and then let's get into what makes the New World Order tick and what their end game is, Michael.
Right, thanks. My research has started pretty much in Ireland, and about 13 years of age, I started to realize, two things. One is that we're being told nothing but a tissue of lies from the official Orthodox, fundamentalistic sort of educational system. It just doesn't fit the facts. Growing up in Belfast at that time was very difficult because there was a lot of violence and trouble. But basically, I started to see through that and check out the orange parades that happened in July, and seeing a lot of the symbolism that was being used there. Well, one thing led to another. Through the study of this symbolism that's being used by the Orange Order, I suddenly started to research the history of the Orange Order. Discovered that it's not so much a political, organization as it is a fraternal brotherhood, And then I saw subsequently later, you know, a few years later, start discovering that this is the same story with the IRA, particularly the provisional IRA, and then we have the official IRA. And then I started to notice by tracking through all the different symbolism and then going through the, you know, the research works and the reference works that basically what we're dealing here is a one-party system. You know, I mean, this is in the early days, so I didn't have the whole globalist picture here. But just from my own researches in the microcosm of Ireland growing up there, I realized that, you know, we're not being told the truth about these organizations and how these are connected to the super Masonic orders, the Freemasonic orders. So basically around 15, 16 years of age, again, pretty much in an Irish context, I broadened my study to look into this whole movement of the secret societies in the world. And this was, you know, a little bit before coming across the works of the great American scholars like the G. Edward Griffins and the Eustace Mullinses and the Jordan Maxwells and so forth and so on. You know, I mean, I hadn't had exposure to these thinkers, even the Ralph Eppersons, you know, all the people who basically connect all the dots. I had to wait till I came to America, you know, in sort of 82, and then later on in the 90s to really sort of have these teachers help put things together. But I noticed that, you see, in America, a few people have the whole European understanding of how the British royals, how some of the Fabian networks, how the Common Purpose, how some of the groups like the Club of the Isles, and this connects again with high-level Freemasonry, not only Scottish Rite Freemasonry, but like I say, the Orange Order, the orders that are behind the IRA, like the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the Ancient Order of Hibernians, the Green Ribbon Society, the Clan na Gael, all from an Irish context. My studies then continued to show me that these groups that are funded and armed to the teeth, basically what the public know as terrorist organizations operating in Ireland, are far from merely Irish. These groups are connected to the international, you see, underground of the entire Black Hand, meaning the entire terrorist network.
That's used to destabilize and frighten the public into accepting the state dominating them. And it's even come out in mainstream news now that the IRA and the Orange, the Protestants at the highest levels, were really meeting and working together, and that they were all basically British and international intelligence, just completely staged.
On a very high level. See, again, when you point your finger in this direction, people, you know, they sort of poo-poo that. They can't see that because they've been so brainwashed. They've been so, you know, brainwashed by the media that they don't check these things out. I'm one of only three. There's three of us that have, you know, studied the occult history of Ireland. This is where my research is then, you know, lo and behold.
Well, I just know it's come out all over the mainstream news, and I've had a lot of the former British commandos, SAS, on, who they would finally get to the top of the IRA, and all three of the leaders were all British intelligence, and then they would, you know, infiltrate the Orange and find out, you know, that the three heads of the IRA were meeting with the three heads of the Orange, and it was just a way to terrorize the public, and they used the infighting and the bombings as a pretext to basically murder and kill and oppress whoever they want.
They've done that. And by consistently, you know, this incredible fear and death toll and the murder of innocent people in the country on both sides. I'm talking because I'm not partisan. I'm not siding with either side. I'm just looking at this thing, you know, from the overview. Yeah, that trouble made Ireland a third world country in the West. They degraded the people. They kept them ignorant. They kept them stupid while they used the land.
Yeah, that's the old divide and conquer. And now groups today want you to bash the Protestants or want you to bash the Jews or want you to bash the Catholics or want you to bash the Hindus. Or they always want you to bash a particular group, and they always want to divide our movement into all these subgroups. And then they'll claim that I'm this group or that group just so they can get other groups like hunting dogs to alert on me. And I'm trying to explain to them they're in a controlled sub paradigm.
How many jugglers can you get in a room? How many pit bulls can you get into the pen, you know? This is, I saw firsthand in the Irish context, also that these groups were connected to these higher Masonic orders, because we're not talking about the street-level stuff here that, you know, people are never going to get their mind around at all. But anyone who studied the British system and how these clubs and these organizations, fraternal orders, are networked into these terrorist organizations, how they fund them, how they meet at the top, like you say, behind the so-called lodge door, that not a single one of these distinctions, not one a single one of these biases that people are willing to die for in the streets. You see, this is what I saw in Ireland. Whether you're Jew or Muslim, you're Christian or not, or whether you are Protestant or Catholic, or whether you are rich or poor, or whether you are conservative or labor, you see, all these divisions that people are just enmeshed in the outer world, I started to learn that this doesn't mean a damn behind the lodge door. There's a totally different agenda, and that's how my researchers, you know, researches into deeper matters, into the whole occult symbolism that these people are using and their occult origins.
And really, it's a gang. And of course, most Masons are well-meaning, good people. They don't understand that the higher levels of their order, you know, have been used as a vehicle for secret intelligence agency operations. Is, you know, basically what's happening. And the New World Order goes to like a wardrobe with a Catholic outfit, a Jewish outfit, a Muslim outfit, a Protestant outfit, and they just put that cloak on, and that's why it's so hard to get after them. But we know the overriding thing they want, you know, they say they're trying to get rid of government, but really they create the mega state through which they can control the society.
And I'm very concerned about what you just said about the fact that we have to start appealing. I mean, my main message is for the complete disbandingment of all secret societies. You know, I don't belong to any secret society, never have done. And the message that is often, you know, recurrent through my own work is for the total illegality, the making of all these kinds of secret societies. I don't care if it's Opus Dei or Scottish Rite Freemasonry. With the masses of the world have need to actually start integrating laws that make these groups absolutely illegal. But more than that, in the meantime, until we do that, my message actually goes out to members, like some of these, the good folks, the good people who are, you know, the rank and file of these orders. That's why my research has taken me into the subject of Masonry and into the occultism, and I've had a lot of backlash from that, from people who don't have a clue in their heads as to why you want to maybe study this kind of subject matter. Well, how the hell are you going to appeal to people who are, you know, well-meaning members of these various secret societies, unless you speak in their own language, in order to try and explain to them some of the symbolism and the rites and the rituals where it comes from? Not that some of the rites and rituals are wrong, it's just that you're doing a normal critique. In order to relate to these people, you've got to know what they're doing. You know, you got to know what.
Well, Michael, I don't want to disagree with you, but anything that has the power to ban something, that is a right of association, it itself could turn into a great tyranny. I mean, I think there should be public exposure. There should be open discussions. If groups are found to be involved in collusion, the classic case of, you know, somebody who's committed a murder, you know, the Mason in distress sign, and they're let off. That happened with a great uncle I had. I mean, he told us about it. It was the cases in the newspaper. But, you know, his argument was he had to go through a Masonic trial afterwards, to find out if that was, you know, true, or they would have, dealt with him, you know, drowning him if he would have lied. You tell low-level Masons that, they just don't, they're just not aware of the higher-level things that go on. But asking you a question, how do you say ban these things? You know, the engine that could ban these societies would rise up into a mighty tyranny itself.
Yeah, there's always that danger, and there's always a danger that, by making them illegal, they go underground. It's not a total win-win solution, but what needs to happen is that the ordinary people have got to find out about the tiger in the long grass and at least arm themselves up with even a modicum. I mean, that's what our programs are doing. That's what our work is doing. And you do have to address it. I like to address them because it's better to address them. You know, you can address the beginners, you can address the seasoned, and you have to address the insider as well. So my work goes a lot to the insiders. I mean, you said it yourself a few minutes ago. You had insiders from the Orange Lodge, insiders from the IRA, whistleblowers. If you look back through the whole conspiracy movement and the exposure, you'll find that the greatest damage has been done by the generals, by the insiders, by the politicians, you know, even up to the level of presidents who've come out and written memoirs and exposed the tiger in the long grass. So we never, you know, it's not my main focus, but it's something that we surely need to always, you know, take on board.
Okay, Michael, listen, I'm going to skip this break for Infowars.com listeners. They'll get a little behind the scenes since we got you on late. I wanted to do a little bit of a pre-interview to see what you wanted to get into. We'll discuss that now for the Internet audience only.
Did you know that it's a...
Okay, we're on the internet now, not on the AM and FM. We got about 3 or 4 minutes before we're back. Michael, I want to really give you a chance to run today. What is it that, you know, because we didn't do a pre-interview, what is it you want to get into today?
Well, there's so much, you know. I mean, again, my history started, I didn't know that when I came to America that I was going to be knee-deep in all of this kind of thing, you know, but my philosophy is always to come to another country and do as the Romans do, you know. So I wanted to learn about American history. And I found out that, you know, we always know in Ireland that the Scots-Irish, you know, fought in your War of Independence. I also found out subsequently that America is famous for losing the wars it wins. And that, you know, the British crown, and I'm not talking about British people here, but I'm talking about the oligarchy that's preying over them, you know, realized that it got its ass kicked in a situation of war. It couldn't take America with force of arms. It tried it, and it
did it through roundtable groups.
Exactly. And Cecil Rhodes and these people have been my study for, you know, as long as I can remember. And that's where I came in, not just studying the Fabian movements, not just studying these Masonic orders, you see, but also studying in their context. I suddenly start realizing these people are operating in America. So my message was to get people out of the political pigsty and say, your troubles are not, you know, listen, America, your problems are not necessarily within the political sphere. That's just an effect. That's not the cause. And then try to point out this surreptitious war of attrition that's been fought on American shores for the destruction of America. That was the main point, you know, when I got to America, started to go into the public eye and make this be known. Because, as I said...
And then people will say, well, Masons founded America, but that's the whole point. Build, destroy, build, destroy, build, destroy, yeah. Order out of chaos. And you've got the lower orders that weren't aware. You've also had some changes in Masonry. And George Washington, as you know, came out and spoke out against those groups that were coming in and infiltrating it and changing it. But really, he was just breaking through and finding out about higher levels to it. But we have to also understand that there was the secret destiny, as you know, of the United States, where they talked about in the 1600s coming here and founding this as the new Atlantis. So
that's right.
So there's the argument, you know, it's always dualed, yin-yang, you know.
You're right on the ball, and it's great to talk to somebody like this who knows that before the official founding of America, these Templars and their agents were already ensconced in the country.
Yeah, they had a bad day yesterday on the 13th anniversary.
That's right. And we have, you know, the thing that President John Adams, President George Washington, they did start to, you know, whistleblow what was going on.
Yeah, Adams had the anti-Masonic party that came up later.
That's right. They did it from being insiders first. First, they hobnobbed with Adam Weishaupt and his cronies. They hobnobbed with the agents of people like Charles de Lorraine, you know, from the province of Lorraine in France and the Grand Orient Freemasonry of France. And then they started to realize, wait a minute, this is a bunch of Luciferianism here. It's not right for America. And they sounded the warning, you know. In a modern context, though, these people who are working for the old British system, you know, who operate, people got to realize that these people have worked through the Russell Trust, they've worked through the Skull and Bones, they worked through the Knights of Columbus, they worked through Scottish Rite Freemasonry. They are alive and well in the American context to take America down because it was too big to take down with a gun to the head situation. You know, that kind of thing, that jackboot system does work in a small
context. Okay, we'll get into that. I also want to get into the hierarchy of the New World Order and the power structure, kind of a historical overview, because I know you're very well informed, and I want your unique perspective on that as well. Okay, so we'll talk about the secret history of the United States and the war with these forces. We'll talk about who the globalists are, what their master plan is. What's some of the other things you want to get into briefly?
Oh, that's good to go with. We got an hour, so that's great.
Well, we got an hour.
We're doing. Also, want to get into maybe the technology aspect.
Yeah. Hold on. We've got an hour
today.
We got an hour and 40 minutes, Michael.
Well, okay,
but you're good for an hour and 40, right?
And the whole technological war.
All right. Here we go. All right, we're going to go over the basic view from Michael Tsarian of the British Secret Society networks using Freemasonry as one vehicle because of its secrecy. They can inhabit any group. And then the secret symbolism, the language that's all around us that they communicate through. And again, the low-level Masons aren't even part of it. And there are other religious groups and secret groups. Masons oversimplifies it. Then we'll get into what the end game is and the technocratic oppression, the electronic control grid. We've got an hour and 35 minutes left with our guest. Okay, Michael, you got the floor. Start rolling.
Well, that was, you know, when I got over to States, then I had to basically brush up. And that's when I bumped into the work of Nord Davis and especially Ralph Epperson, you know, who's just great. His work put a lot of pieces together for me. And then, of course, the great G. Edward Griffin and Eustace Mullins, you know, it became like a study because when I realized that the average American doesn't know anything about this, yeah, I'd bump into the average, you know, I'd bump into occasionally to a Vietnam vet who had been through so much hell through the VA hospitals that these guys knew, you know, something about what was going on, especially about the federal system and the Federal Reserve and so on. And so my education began in the 90s, you know, to sort of brush up on, okay, I've seen it in an Irish context. I've seen that one picture of tyranny, but how does this work in the American context, you know? So as I started to study more and got into the Webster Tarpleys, you see, and even the Dr. John Coleman's, it was a long discovery to find out that this country didn't really win the War of Independence because they let their guard down. They became so apathetic. They became so decadent and narcissistic that, you know, it was easy pickings right from the time of, you know, the first presidents, basically, for this federalistic group to get in, to insinuate itself into the body politic of America through the federal systems, to get rid of the republic, to change the Constitution, to amend it, and so forth and so on, all the stuff that you've covered yourself and so many things. You know, this was my education to find out. But my main point was, though, is more of a historian aspect to say, look, never forget that America is just the last in line to be taken down. The people who are doing this have colonized and colonized the world. They've been doing it for centuries of time. And my research has led it back to Egypt. You know, first of all, I had studied the ancient Irish myths. That helped me, you know, with my first book on Atlantis, to get into a lot of areas there to show just how ancient this actual, you know, oligarchy is, that they keep bloodlines, and these bloodlines are still today, and the politicians that pop their heads up every 4 years, there they are again with their bloodline connections back to the ancient royal oligarchs of Europe. But then what happened is I got more and more, you know, into it after the first book was done. Then I started to really look at the Egyptian roots of this. And my research took me to a group that I refer to as the Atenists. It's the same group of, you know, people would refer to, say, by the terms such as Luciferian or whatever. You know, my term for it is Atenists. This is going back to the 14th dynasty, the 18th dynasty of Europe, 18th dynasty of Egypt, about 1400 years B.C. is where it all began. You know, so I've actually traced it back to the reign of the pharaoh Akhenaten.
Well, just to be clear, when you read mainline, even British history, you know, they say they're related to the pharaohs. They say they are related to Moses, and you know, and the you know, the queen is coronated on Jacob's stone, and all of this, and so they really believe this. And worldwide, international royalty, even in Japan, says that the greatest queen is the royalty in England, and that they all claim they're part of that and are part of the same secret societies there. So regardless of whether it's true or not, they do claim lineage to the pharaohs.
You're absolutely spot on. And you see, it doesn't have to be necessarily just bloodline. For a certain amount of the top boys, it is a bloodline connection. For everybody else that serves this monster, it's an ideological, you know, connection. Equally as bad, equally as pernicious. These are not people who serve the good of the human race or for the uplift of the human race. These are ancient pharaohs who have kept bloodline dynasties, and people better believe that they have not gone away. The different houses of Europe that I address, you see, and the symbolism that they use. So as I started to track this back, it started to explain these things about, like you say, the symbolism behind the coronation and all the various other symbolism and regalia that we see throughout all of Europe as well as Britain. And it was fascinating to see that, you know, how it all went back to this particular individual and his sort of megalomania, this Akhenaten, and his basically solar cult. These were worshippers of the sun. They were worshippers of what I refer to as the dark side of the sun. And, you know, their generation, they were expurged. Finally, from Egypt, they had basically committed so much desecration on the land of Egypt that finally, you know, in the reign of Akhenaten, the people of Egypt rose up and basically exiled these guys. And then history loses track of them. They just disappear. Whether you're coming at this from a biblical point of view, as you said, through the Moses story, or you're coming at it through alternative historical approaches, basically they're meant to have fallen off the map, and history pays them no more mind. My work picks up on the fact that after they were exiled, after this famous exodus, they did not fade away, and that these people are instrumental behind the, you know, powers in Greece.
All right, stay there. Stay there. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Michael Desarian, stay with us. Michael Desarian, before we go any further, give out your website for listeners that want to check it out.
Well, it's MichaelTessarian.com, and the new DVD on technology architectsofcontrol.com.
Yeah, I was checking out the trailer for that. That looks really powerful. Tsarion is T-S-A-R-I-O-N. So MichaelTsarion.com. Michael, I don't know if the Queen of England's really related to Moses. I don't know if she's really related to the Egyptian pharaohs, B.C. I don't know if the Sun King of France, you know, was you know, really related to Jesus's family. The point is, they believe they are. They take it deadly serious. And I've been inside Bohemian Grove. People say, oh, that's just a play, you know, a mock human sacrifice. Well, regardless of what it is, those old men that I was with in that crowd of about 1,500 watching the ritual, they were in religious rapture. They were grinding their teeth. They were breathing heavy. Whatever the real ritual was over behind some black curtains from the trees across the water before they brought the baby, you know, the small child, the effigy over to burn it before Lilith. But then, of course, these occultists use different names. They called it Moloch. I know that's the bull, but they call their owl Moloch. They address it as a female and then as a male deity. And then they had, I mean, you know, it's all on video in my film, The Order of Death. And then we had somebody else sneak in who they then set up and sent to prison. Chris Jones, no relation to me. So I mean, this is really going on. They really believe this, whether it's true or not. I know you, from your deep research in Europe and around the world, believe that there is some basis in fact in it. So let's continue on, Michael.
Well, that's right. You know, again, as far as I'm concerned, it's, they believe it in their own heads. They're not only bloodline connection, they have the ideological henchmen who have sworn allegiance, you know, for one reason or another. The basic fact is that my researchers did discover this connection to Egypt, not only there, but this the basic origin of the Knights Templar, the Order of Sion, you know, just the very Judaic phrases, which actually are more correctly to say Egyptian Atmist phrases.
Well, let me stop you right there. I mean, that's an absolute fact, and that's not even hidden, that in, you know, nope, basic Masonic literature and basic magic literature, white and black, it's all about the keys of Solomon, Solomon's ring, the seal of Solomon. It's all about controlling these jinn, these entities, these angels. And Solomon was open about it was the secret of Egypt and the secrets of Greece and the secrets of Babylon and the secrets of all of these countries. And people then say, well, the whole New World Order is Judaic. No, it was the Jews that codified it and who were big on writing things down. And so when Alexandria got destroyed in Egypt and when Rome got destroyed in its libraries, it was the Judaics who carried on the mystery schools.
Right. Within that, not ordinary Jews, but this elite group. The
Levites.
Levitical level.
The Levites.
We're talking about the Kabbalistic, Levitical, Mosaic, and also the, what's called the Gaonim. This is a word that people have got to become familiar with because it explains the capital G that the Masons use. You know, people want to pick up my Irish Origins of Civilization double volume. They're going to find chapter after chapter there showing this connection between the Judaic elites and the ancient pharaonics, and then how that percolates down into modern times through this occult, you know, bloodline dragon court thread that people really need to be understanding about so they can not only decode the symbolism, but they can find out the roots of this tyranny, because we're here in the effects of the tyranny, but we need to know its origins as well. And the most amazing thing is that these guys mean business. They lost an empire in the past, and you know, they subsequently experienced a old world disorder. And so everything that's being built now, you know, students of the New World Order need to realize it's because they're trying to build a New World Order to replace an old
world. And that's why their symbol is, that's why their symbol is the pyramid and the all-seeing eye, which is the black sunshine.
Exactly. These people do worship the dark side of the sun. They can rightly be referred to. Christians refer to them as Luciferians, and it's a perfectly adequate.
And that's
exactly
what the Nazis'
what
secret highest was, the Black Sun. So it,
yeah,
and people say, how could the Zionists and the Nazis worship the same thing? Because it doesn't matter. All these people at the top worship the same deal.
How can it be that the same order of the Knights of Malta, the sovereign order of the Knights of Malta, can have members as extreme right as von Papen and as Hermann Göring, and then 5 minutes later be initiating into their order people as, on the left, as Nelson Mandela? I got a question for people as to why that would be. They got to realize that behind the large doors, we said earlier, none of these distinctions on the street level mean a damn. This is an entire, you know, carnival, a danse macabre for people to get caught up in. You know, it just has no reality, and this is what people need to understand. If they study the symbolism long enough, if they track it through, and I've done like 30 years of research on this, so, you know, this is the age in which this information is now finally coming to light. These guys, not only do they fully believe it in their own minds, some of these kings and queens, like Louis XVI of France and various other potentates, have designed entire cities based on Egyptian symbolism to prove that they believe themselves as the new kings and sun pharaohs.
Yeah, that was the sun king and called himself the sun king. And then we had Francois Mitterrand admitting that he was channeling Lucifer and going on mountaintops to pray. Then they had the Japanese architect build a pyramid with 666 pieces of this gold-pink glass, and then it has black pyramid inside. I mean, this is all right out in the open.
That's right. I never stop stressing, you see, I mean, even though I've written a lot on Ireland, you know, the second book in the volume is dedicated to Egypt to show exactly that it came from a specific time, from a specific individual, a specific cult, a specific warped version of solar occultism, you see, and how this continues alive. That is why there are so many obelisks in Rome and in Vatican City. That's why Rome has certain, you know, geomantic alignments that it does. Same thing applies to Washington, D.C. Same thing applies to Cologne, to Paris.
They believe that they call in spiritual forces from another dimension. Now, again, whether you believe this or not, folks, the elite believe it. Explain the sacred architecture.
Well, that's right. And within Masonry, if you look at the highest degrees of Masonry, they have that Judaic aspect that you were talking about, Knights of the Kadosh, Knights of the, you know, the secret. You know, all of these weird terminologies they've got right there. People can see this in the design of the cities. They can, you know, I have a huge collection of Masonic literature, so we're not making anything up. This is from the horse's mouth. You only need to go to the Albert Mackey's and to the actual Masonic encyclopedias. This is not hard to do, even though it takes a lot of time. But if people spend the time, you know, see to peruse our works, and we put this stuff on DVD, we put it in books, so it's there for people who don't have the time to do all this research to find out that America is not free. America has been colonized by the, you know, the royals and the pharaohs of old, and America was ostensibly meant to be the last bastion against these oligarchs, these imperialists. What the people need to understand in America context particularly is that the imperialism is not gone away. The stuff that you're seeing now with the, you know, the Amero coming in and the NAFTA and the CAFTA and the destruction of the American Constitution, this is a form of imperialism that has been insinuated.
And take Ireland. Ireland says no to the Lisbon Treaty, EU expansion, and then they say, we don't care, we're going to bring it back up for another vote or implement it by fiat.
It's exactly the same the way that, you know, it's a mafioso situation. They'll never, this kind of vampire never goes away until it's invited across.
And
the
going back and, to Egypt, we see it in the Old Testament and in the New. Over and over again, the Pharaoh would send out to the different slave groups he had and would kill a large portion of their children to keep the slaves at a lower population. You see the CPS today going out and kidnapping the children. It's all repeated, and they figured out thousands of years ago, thousands of years B.C., how to control societies.
And I want to highlight something you just said a few minutes ago about the kind of dark forces that they're in league with. Those dark, you know, again, if people don't understand it, that's just too bad. But the fact is, these people do not act in just a material sphere of, you know, of influence. They are very much tied into something off-world. They're tied into other dark angelic forces, and they have to offer up sacrifices on this planet to those beings that they're in league with. And that is what, in my view, is, you know, pretty much a lot of the child abduction, the wars, the world wars that we've experienced, and just the general appetite, or not the appetite, but the general everyday, the toxic, you know, influx of trauma across the TV, you see, and in our world in general. They need anxiety. They want to keep people, you know, crippled and
they are changing our neural pathways, showing us millions of simulated murders on TV, traumatizing us, where they now have university studies with the brain waves, where the area of the brain associated with pleasure, even in, quote, mainstream people, is lighting up when they see simulated murders, torture, death. They are turning us psychically into them.
I couldn't agree more, Alex, and, you know, it's a situation of the normal lower-level sadomasochism that people have multiplied infinitely, this constant appeal to the limbic and mammalian centers of the brain. You know, and it's a diet, and a diet until you get so used to it that you don't even know what reason is anymore. You can't critically look at anything. You have an immediate defense mechanism as soon as they, you know, it's like most of these people that today you have the internet riddled with internet assassins and debunkers, so-called, quote-unquote. And these are people that I describe like the deer in the headlights of the oncoming truth movement who can't not stand that oncoming, you know, juggernaut of truth.
And that's the next issue is the enemy knows throughout history the human spirit rebels. Goodness, you know, the light, you know, literally blots out their black sunshine, as they call it. And so they're doing everything they can with chemicals and microwaves and frequency pollution and radiation openly. And they write all this in their own documents that we've covered, and we cover in Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, to pollute our minds with the images, the toxins, all of it overlaid, you know, the brainwashing through the television, both semantically and with the frequency of it, to try to blind us. And I've seen them go from arrogant to now being fearful. What are they so afraid of, Michael?
Well, they're always afraid of the human race because this is the surf, you know, that they've been able to enslave. And, of course, the big fear is that you know, that particular indentured servant, slave, might, in fact, wake up and throw away, you know, all of the junk that, you know, basically an age of awakening is what they're fearful of. Anyone who has control that's surreptitious, anyone who has a catalog of criminality like they have, these are super criminals, mega criminals, the genocides, the colonializations, the war on consciousness, you know, all the devastation that they've wreaked, of course these are criminals who don't want, you know, to be discovered or the light to be shone on them. I've often said in my work that, hey, these guys say that they're worshippers of the sun, they claim to worship light. What would happen to them? Let's see the effects on them when we turn the light of truth and knowledge onto them, see how they like it. You know, and this
well,
is
Revelation
the
says
kind of
they traffic in the souls of men. That's really what's valuable to them is blinders, shutting people down, darkness, destruction. Look at the artwork the elite buys, buckets of maggots, images of dead babies. I mean, this is the most popular art across the board worldwide with the elites, you know, 100 million pounds. Sometimes $200 million, you know, for one piece of blasphemous art. And they say, we're buying this art to worship it, to adulate it, to, you know, to give it the support it deserves. So what is their master plan? If they were to win, what is the world they're trying to set up? Let's get into the technological enslavement.
They're not trying to set it up. They've already been doing it. As I said before, this imperialist movement of this juggernaut, we're only seeing the latter days of something that has been a continuous, ongoing incremental movement, you know, down through history. Americans tend to, you know, not see that. They don't see, you know, the whole movement.
Well, Michael, I see it. I'm talking about their end game. They're gearing up for something big.
Well, I believe it's basically, this ties into my work on 2012 and what's coming there. It's a sort of a zero hour. This is the death of anything human. It doesn't mean the death of the planet. It doesn't mean, you know, the end of nature. It doesn't even necessarily mean the end of the world. What it means is that the end, and by God, anyone with their eyes open can see it's already taken place, it's a countdown to the extinction of what we would use when we say the word human. What we will have after 2012, 2015, you see, is a post-human world. They're racing headlong. You've dealt with it in Endgame.
And all their futurists, they are saying that they will have it by 2012 to 2020 if it occurs well. You're right. They are incrementally now, but accelerating it, turning all the systems on.
Well, remember, what they're going to turn on happens 2012 and post. Before you can turn something on, you've got to end or bring to an end that which was before. So all the idioms, all the customs, the traditions that all the people of the world, especially of the Western world, because the Western world is now, as you see, being turned into a third world country, and the third world is rising to be a first world. What we're heading towards right now is basically a post-human dystopia in which man is either so reduced to a robotic level that he runs even more headlong into the pharmaceutical thing to drug and to escape himself, or it will literally be some sort of Blade Runner dystopia in which you are literally, you know, going to be vaccinated in a way that changes your, you know, being, or your, they've messed with our DNA.
And by the way, 20 years ago, they had live viruses, and now they're advertising them, that go in and create lobotomies in key areas of the brain. The viruses attack specific brain tissues to literally create mindless gibbering automatons, and all of them say this is the plan, and DARPA says this is the plan, and as horrible as this sounds, they need to do this, and they want to exterminate at least 90% of us and have 10% subhuman slave creatures. that serve them.
Well, I believe if you also bring in the whole the concept of the GMOs, you start to discover that the hoarding of the actual organic seeds that nature has produced, they're siloing this, they're archiving it.
Doomsday vaults.
What's that?
They've created doomsday vaults, the Rockefellers and the UN have, because
right. Now,
they're going to infect everything.
Right, exactly. My vision is that they may, in fact, unleash some sort of worldwide plague on the plant life, on the flora.
Mm-hmm.
And then this creates us to either be interned underground or in some sort of, silo or dome situation in which only the privileged are given the right kind of food, et cetera, and that person has to be totally conformist. They either wipe out everybody
else. Let me stop you, Michael. This is the stated reverse-engineered plan. They state, they have black op wars, they have drug wars to build up the police, and they stage terror to expand the criminal control grid. Then they have smaller controlled bioweapon releases to get us into compact cities. Then they start the real mass exterminations. That is the stated plan.
I agree with you there. I absolutely have come to the same conclusions in my own work, that something along these lines is, so people are hearing us now thinking we're talking sci-fi. This is already happening. The Monsanto and the GMO is all behind us. There's something going on, and it ties back to what we said about the inability to be able to control masses of people through the gun-to-the-head system. That has been tried. It doesn't work. The next kind of colonialism that we're going to experience, the next kind of imperialism, is going to be a genetic one. We deal with this in the Architects of Control DVD. That DVD covers a lot of ground, actually, and it also goes into the psychological question of why people lend themselves to this kind of submission. I don't know if we have time to talk about it.
We will. We have plenty of time. We're going to have you back soon. We have a whole other hour and 10 minutes coming up. But the point you're making, Monsanto said in 99, in a public speech, it was in major papers, that they plan to infect everything so that then no one has a choice. They admit that this is meant to take over the entire biosphere, and with the Terminator genes and others, end the regular life cycle. The carbon tax is meant to be a tax on humans to literally say that humans are bad, with this new guild of millions per country of environmental enforcers, one-child policy, all of this. I mean, I don't think the public understands. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, that was only warm-up for what they're getting ready to do.
Well, that's my main point. It's warm up. What we're seeing now is just the preliminary tip of the iceberg, Now, this the Architects of Control DVD is actually dedicated to Jim Keith and to also Ezra Pound. These are two people that have a big impact on me, because Jim Keith is always looking, and I know you do as well, at this whole technological leviathan, which is one of the greatest clubs in the hands of the elite.
Stay there. Michael Tesserian. We're going to talk behind scenes as well now. Okay, Michael, just to be clear, because you talked about only having an hour, you know you're on with us for a whole nother hour, correct?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, good. Again, we're on the internet right now. We could skip this break right now, but I don't want to get into any of the main subject you're going to be covering, because I want to share all this with everybody out there on the AM and FM shortwave satellite and the rest of it. And I keep jumping in because I just want to back up everything you're saying. I think we need to reach out, like you said 40 minutes ago, to the minions of this, the mid-level servants who believe the utopia they're being sold. Most of them, I don't think, understand they're not going to be part of this. But then on the other side, you have the nihilistic scientists who I notice are clustered all around bioweapons labs and biology departments, like Eric Pianca. And the issue is, he says, kill 90% of us now, they're born Ebola. He can't wait for his own family to die. And we even got the FBI to go out and talk to him. The point is, he gets 95% standing ovation, with the scientist crying when he talks about how everyone's going to be killed. And then his graduate students send me threatening letters saying, look, he's not extreme. Most of us believe everyone should be killed. And you Google the person's name, and there they are in a white lab coat working at a bioweapons lab. So, the point is, when they make a movie like 13 Monkeys, they're not playing games, folks. Just like we told you about the economic stuff that was going to happen. It's like I told you about government-sponsored terrorism that was coming and then it happened. Believe me, all we're doing is opening up the TV guide and telling you what the enemy says they're going to do. This is in white papers. This is in UN biological diversity assessments. This is the stated operation. And so when we come back, I want to get into that. But just briefly, behind the scenes, they're not all-powerful. They're not invincible. Just like in the fake French Revolution, the Illuminati Revolution, they tried to go to a 10-day work week. They tried to change the calendar, change the clocks. They tried to destroy everything that had previously been there and remake it, but that failed. And I know they now have high-tech systems, but I don't see their program being on schedule, Michael.
Well, of course, that's what happened in 2000. Everyone thought they were going to cap the pyramid. You know, it was all going to happen then. And, you know, they have delays. They even have dynastic rivalries. They've got, when you're building a new world order, you know, you have to also feed the dogs. What's been happening in the last 10 years, especially even with Iraq and Iran, and what they're wanting to do is these kinds of territorial urges and the fight for oil does not bother the people who are orchestrating this at the top of the pyramid. That's just the stuff for the oily rags, the sort of sub-level dynastic concerns, you know, the Cheneys, the Bushes, the people like that, the Margaret Thatchers, them and their family need to be paid off. So what you're seeing in the last 10 years since the new millennium begun is the feeding of the monkey. You've got to feed the lizard.
Well, also, it's important to demonize America and have all of this heaped on us to discredit free market capitalism, which it isn't. So we have to be made the bad guy so the new monopolar New World Order can rise up out of Europe. Here we go. Michael Desarian is our guest. MichaelDesarian.com's website. Link up on Infowars.com right now. It's hard to believe, but in my film Endgame, we only show you the tip of the iceberg about who these global controllers are. I mean, how do you get scientists in the U.S. and Russia and everywhere to go nerve gas little children or test radiation on children and kill them or test it on troops? That isn't about testing the nerve gas. They know it'll kill a person or the radiation. It's about creating cadres of scientists who will buy into this and who enjoy exercising the psychopathic power to create larger cadres of subunits to serve the New World Order going into the mass extermination. And I want you to know, they're going to claim Al-Qaeda did it or claim it came out of a lab, but when you and your family are dying, especially you police out there, you can at least, you know, realize that for those that survive, that the New World Order is real and that this really happened and that we really warned you. We were talking during the break about them not capping the pyramid in 2000 as they were openly worshiping what they called anti-beast or Anamun, and you were just talking about that. It was on worldwide TV, fake fire shooting out of the ground, fireworks, huge horned demons marching on movie screens at the Giza Plateau, worldwide occultism. PBS carried it, open Lucifer worship on TV, and it was like I would mention it to people and no one even seemed to care. Michael Desarian.
Well, exactly right. And people have to realize that these guys, on the highest level, you see, they operate based on an old stellar form of timing, based on ancient zodiacs, the whole concept of that when you do something, the timing has to be right. This I discovered in the context of Ireland when I was studying things like the very fact that the Orange Parade happens, you know, very close to midsummer, the midsummer solstice, just like your Bohemian Grove investigation pointed out that the dates are very important, the midsummer, the summer solstice. We have the same issue happening in Northern Ireland where the 12th of July parades are scheduled for the movement of the sun, you know, to the center point there. The Black Preceptory, which is a very secret order behind the Orange Lodge, they have their ceremonies on July 13th. This ritualistic element is very, very important. People will notice that the declarations of war, whether it's March 17th, the Feast of Purim, you see, or any other date that comes about, is not random. It is not done by accident. And so the openings of this, the closings of that, the signing of the euro dollar, you know, all the things that the MEPs do or the people who control them do is done based on ancient solar and stellar and lunar zodiacs. People have to understand this. It's based on ancient Masonic timings. You know, we got to understand.
And by the way, that comes out in mainstream media that, Tony Blair every morning is possessed by the spirit of the light. He falls on the ground and convulses. He goes to the four corners of the earth to do weird rituals. Oh, and Ronald Reagan, everything he does is according to the astrology. And, you know, this all comes out.
Exactly. And that's the reason why my life took me into those areas to study these secret societies quite intimately, to definitely get into these occult areas, to find out what it is that they're up to. What are they doing? And then basically to pull back from the canvas and discover, my God, this is a worldwide ritual that involves many, many tentacles. But getting back to the point about this whole technotronic age, you know, as I said, my work is dedicated to Jim Keefe, and I want people to remember his name because he's one of the greatest American researchers you could imagine.
Do you believe he was murdered?
Absolutely, no doubt in my mind, and the people closest to him also speculate upon that.
Publisher died mysteriously right after he did.
Yes, exactly. And another friend of his, a co-researcher, was also mysteriously killed. So there's no doubt in my mind that they either, you know, they took this guy out because he was so special. He had the ability and the charm to reach many, many people.
Well, he also got wide-spectrum analysis.
Yeah.
I mean, he really got the big picture.
Well, remember, these guys were tied up. Jim had investigated Scientology and did a runner from it because he knew, my God, what the hell is going on here? And then tried to whistleblow that, and from there, you know, went on to, like I did in my own way, to, you know, branch out and to find out about the world, the great global conspiracy. And his work is fundamental. His book, Mass Control, you know, is a central part of the DVD we're doing right now, about to release next month or very shortly. And this goes into his work. It's dedicated to his work. And people have got to understand.
All right, stay there. We're going to break for 1 minute. Come back with the next hour of Michael Desari and getting into this.
Thank you for listening to GCN.
All right, let me go ahead and talk to him now.
Visit GCNlive.com today.
And from there, you know, went on to, like I did in my own way, to, you know, branch out and to find out about the world, the great global conspiracy. And his work is fundamental. His book, Mass Control, you know, is a central part of the DVD we're doing right now, about to release next month or very shortly. And this goes into his work. It's dedicated to his work. And people have got to understand.
All right, stay there. We're going to break for 1 minute. Come back with the next hour of Michael Desari and getting into this. My websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, Infowars.net, PrisonPlanet.tv, JonesReport.com, TruthNews.us are some of the alternate auxiliary sites. They have some exclusive news that's only on those sites, but the big main sites that are updated 3 or 4 times a day are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Michael, I want to get into a little bit of positive news first, then I want to get into the technological control grid. The enslavement grid, what your new film's about, that you know, is the bad news, but knowing the enemy is half the battle. But you talk and speak a lot about the exponential awakening. And listen, I tend to underestimate how many people I reach individually. And I'm just one, you know, little outpost in all of this. I don't overgauge myself. But really, it doesn't matter any guest I call up now, some engineer or Chuck Norris or, you know, some politician or somebody in another country, or I go to foreign countries, people all over the street come up to me now. You know, I go to Honduras, or I go to England, or I go to Germany, or I go to, you know, some other part of the world. And just, you know, I'm one little guy in all this. And now, I mean, take Austin, you know, my center of operations. It's now where I'll be at the gym and 80% of the people in there come up and aren't just coming up saying hi. They're waking up. They're listening. And so I see with my own life an exponential explosion in people starting to understand there's more to the world than meets the eye or the mainstream media surface. And so it's exponential. So I see these two things, that, you know, the global enslavement grid coming head to head with a mass human awakening. Your comments on that?
Well, I agree with that totally. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing my work. It is one of the things I also, everything you said is true for me as well. Wherever I go, the enormous amount of emails and feedback that I get, you know, and even the negative reaction, at least that shows me that this juggernaut, as I said, the lights, you know, must be blinding some people. That gives you the reverse understanding that, you know, it must be happening, because look at the reactions it's causing, even in a negative way to people. You must know that by their threat, you can also tell, you know, by their backlashing, you can tell, my God, you know, our time has come. And it's, I always describe it as being that people have to stay very optimistic what's happening. This can. I am not a person who ever believes that evil will ever triumph in the world, because just like nature abhors a vacuum, nature also abhors that which is evil. If you are evil, if you're operating from that mindset, you've actually just raised a red flag to the powers of nature to say, come and get me, wipe me out. And I also believe that we are in the time of the death throes of this kind of, you know, sphere of activity, this kind of imperialism. We're actually, it's bad, it's hot, yep, they're up in our face. But as a matter of fact, I also believe, you see, that it's a situation in which these individuals, it's their dying days. They're in the last phase of the tyranny, and that, you know, it's a situation that we're gonna, you know, overcome it. And it's just, I don't entertain any other idea at all, because I wouldn't be wasting my time on 5 minutes of any of this research if I didn't totally and utterly believe that good always triumphs over evil, and it will do, and that these people are evil. And my message is that we have to study the nature of evil. Yeah, a person can be good, but a person can also be good and stupid, or good and blind. The point is now that the awakening continues as we pass the torch from one person to the other. We get our arms around as much information as we can. We do not bicker because we have minute differences. We're all encamped here. I said this in one of my talks in Los Angeles. You know, we all have our tents encamped upon the battlefield, we have a common enemy to fight. Let us not then bicker and fight amongst ourselves, which is exactly what the enemy on the other side of the valley wants us to do, and which is expert at creating situations in which we do this. We've got to understand the fifth columnist, the agent provocateurs who come in to put, you know, pit one side of the research community against another. That's why the internet is infested with these kinds of people, these so-called debunkers, these so-called swarmy, slimy, you know, so-called internet assassins. I mean, I've often said that, you know, behind every garbage can is a critic. Well, inside every garbage can is a, you know, a debunker. And these people are the ones who are like the frozen deer, you know, the toothless piranhas that are stifling.
Well, have you noticed they never give any proof either? You know, we're saying we're waking up, we're positive, we're affecting truth. I know, but people who are really doing it are waking people up, they're involved, they're saying let's work together, but the enemy will attack you and then say, oh, we should work together, why aren't you working together? It's just unbelievable. But it's not just conscious enemy operatives. There are a lot of just broken down, morbid, malfunctioning minds out there that, you know, also have woken up to the New World Order, but still just thrash about attacking everyone. We're going to continue with Michael Tesserian. MichaelTesserian.com is his website. Stay with us. I'm going to skip this one, too. John.
Are you tired of hearing that?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to skip this break, too.
Okay.
Okay, Michael, we're going to skip this one, too, for the internet-only audience. When we come back, let's get into the control grid and a lot more. But, yeah.
You said you had an address?
Yeah, but we're on air. At the end of the show, I'll just give you my address, and I'd like to get your stuff. Okay. And I got several addresses, and I don't want to give out my personal address on air.
Yeah. Okay, not online. Not on air, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you bring up the debunkers, and just while we're on the internet audience, it doesn't bother me that so many people attack me or manufacture all these things I've supposedly done. And I know that they do that to you, I know. Excuse me.
Absolutely.
It's that I know that most of them actually aren't government agents. They are just products of the society. And it just blows me away where, I mean, you know, here's an example. There's all these locals in Austin, and they just keep claiming lies about me. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they just keep saying I'm in their business. I'm doing things to them. I'm hurting them. And they call me up and say, you've done this and that. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
and they don't.
Paranoid.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so then it builds a type of delusion. And we see that with the delusion of the fear of the Muslims or delusion of the fear of this group or that group. I mean, I think it's more of a spirit or a program, a download, not even so much a government operation. Obviously, some of it is. And it's just so sad to see
them. I believe it.
To see them in their hyper competitiveness. They're just jealous that I'm able to reach so many people or that you're able to reach so many people. And so they involve themselves in this infighting, and then they make us close our doors to them, and then they blame us for closing our doors to them when they are the ones attacking us and making stuff up.
I agree. I've also tracked the same thing back to envy. I agree wholeheartedly because I've given it so much thought, you know, since I became more publicly known, of course, then I had to address this particular backlashing issue. And I've tracked it to envy. I've tracked it to the fact that they are like the deer in the headlights. They're scared to lose, you know, what they think is their security by getting into knowledge, because knowledge threatens you. Knowledge asks you to think more, to think again, to reevaluate everything you know. And this is, of course, extremely threatening to most people who've just, you know, felt, hey, good, I was just falling asleep. I was just rolling over there to go to sleep and have everything be secure. And now you guys come along and tell me about the Illuminati, or you tell me about, you know, the what's waiting for me tomorrow in a dystopia if I don't get up and do something. You put doubt on me about my elected leaders and so forth and so on. You tell me to read. You tell me to study. You know, and this is a big threat to those people who are just so apathetic and narcissistic. So, of course, they backlash. I always take it as a positive sign. You know, in the last segment,
well, no,
you're talking
I agree.
About positive.
But I mean, I agree with you, but I'm saying people, we've even woken up. They'll admit I've woken them up or you've woken them up, but then they'll still say we're bad. Well, you judge a tree by its fruits. How do we wake up so many, but then we're bad, and then they manufacture all these crimes we've supposedly committed so that they have a rationalization to make up more crap about us? Here we go.
Radio Network.
Okay, we got about 51 minutes left with Michael Tesserian, great researcher, MichaelTesserian.com. Michael, break down the technological control grid, the microwave guns, the face scanning cameras, the poison in the food and water, all of it admitted, all of it being intensified, 1 in 33 having cancer, now 1 in 2 in men, 1 in 3 in women. You know, just, I mean, the plagues are upon us. It is engineered. Break down this grid.
Well, this, you know, like I said, coming out of the work of Jim Keith and the people who had more of a look at this technotronic world, and you even have some of the insiders talking about that they can't wait for this, people of the Bertrand Russell School, you see, and the whole Bread and Circus clan, the intellectual types. What I've been studying is more the elite type, the people at the top of the pyramid. What is it, what is their thinking? What do they want? How do they see mankind? You know, the people coming out of the Thomas Malthus School, the people coming out of the Frankfurt Schools and the Tavistock Institute, and these highbrows who have always looked at us as some sort of subhuman, animalistic kind of being. I mean, I don't want to get into it right now, but my work even tracks the whole genetic interference with mankind back thousands of years ago. So what we're seeing now with the industrial age, and now we're in the Silicon Age, and we have all these MITs and Sun corporations, you see, and all of this effort to look at our genes and to present the gene to us in a very subliminally negative way as some sort of mechanical construct that is just, you know, like
it's
a
dirty, it's broken, we're bad. And for those that don't know, they would 2,000 years ago in Rome breed large brutish, quote, dumb Germans, Gauls, and others, you know, together when the slaves were mainly white. And then it's openly in the slave manuals, very politically incorrect to say, but it's actually history. I'm not saying it worked, but they actually did also breed people in this country to be large and stupid, according to what the official documents say. Go ahead.
That's right. This is where they're at. This is what, you know, Jim Keith's work really alerted me to, the Dr. Delgados, these Frankensteinian, you know, Bela Lugosi creatures that, you know, haunt the technical world that have huge amount of funding. And what really caught my eye, because as I told you before, my introduction to a lot of this had been through art and through symbolism, I started to notice that the symbolism that these, you know, Alex DeGrays and these individuals who are now behind the whole genome project and many of the other technological sort of projects and organizations, right from the time of Francis Crick doing his main research in the Templar zones of London, and then the first genetic experiments being done in the Templar areas of Scotland near Rosslyn. You know, this kind of stuff started to, you know, start to like raise a red flag for me, because here we're up against the Templar symbolism again. Here we're seeing the Holy Grail symbolism again. Here we're seeing the man in white with the red crosses. What is all of this? What has science got to do with any of this? So then I started, you know, tracking that and got into the work of Jim Keith and others who start talking about that, look, the assault on the human race has been on consciousness, but it's also been on biology. And anyone who stands up against the FDA, the AMA, any of the Dr. Raymond Royal Rifes, the Wilhelm Reichs, the Walter Russells, you know, the Max Gersons, the list is endless of anyone who stands up to say, here's how real healing happens, here's how you get, you know, back to your center, both not only legal sovereignty in a social sense, but spiritual sovereignty. You know, they suppress and molest those people. They burn their works. They purge them. They do not let their knowledge be known. So some of the attacks on the human being, you see, we have to understand the nature of evil and understand the Hydra that is not just attacking in one way. In fact, often, as Archibald Wavell, the general, said, watch what the right hand is doing because you're not seeing the left hand. They may present in front of you some sort of bugbear, some sort of, you know, what's it? It's like Wizard of Oz shadow for you to be, you know, shaking in front of, but the real enemy is coming at you from the back. So this is what I've also been studying, and I really do believe that this post-human world is upon us. Whether the global village is upon us. I mean, that comes out of my studies of Fabianism and study of the common purpose and all of that. So, but the global village can be many things. They may not even put chains on you. They may not even build a wall around you. But you can still inhabit this planet as a global slave in the global village. There's many ways of attaining this. And through these RFID chips, the whole situation of the whole digital kingdom opening up for us, this is what's going at breakneck speed. Since the sort of falling back of the main military budgets, we're not too much falling back on it, but as obviously they scaled back from Star Wars and these other things, where do you think all that money is going? That money is now going into the whole technological, you know, world to create for human race, basically a cyber purgatory, which is going to be what supplants this ending that I've talked about. In the next 4 to 5 years, you're going to see a countdown to extinction of all the traditions, all the accepted norms that our forefathers worked for, we've understood, that our grandparents and our parents, this is both in education, but specifically in medical. Just look at the way that children are medicated up the eyeballs right now. You know, I mean, the complete destruction. There's even one slug from Stanford University who wants to start introducing the ADD pills, the drugs, before children even show the symptoms of it. He already wants to put them on that.
No. There's already drugging of children in utero if they, quote, come from poor families in Oregon, which is eugenics.
Right, exactly. This goes back to Maury Stokes, right back to the whole Fabian situation, you know, and back to the...
And what it is, these are really murderous, bloodthirsty control freaks who just have disdain and arrogance for everyone. And I've actually talked to some of these top scientists and elitists from these big families. They're almost mentally retarded in a way. They're gibbering. They're goblin-like. And they're not even that smart. They're just vicious, vicious little demons.
Well, the more empty you are, remember, it's like Wilhelm Reich's little man, the more little you are, the more fearful you are, the more that you need to exercise these controls. It is the Wizard of Oz shadow situation. And people need to wake up, turn on the lights, and not be afraid of that type of thing. It ties into the awakening that you spoke of, you know, in the previous segment here. And that is happening. It needs to continue to happen. And as I say, I'm very adamant of people, do not territorialize this knowledge. First of all, this is an alternative subject that we deal with. It is not mainstream. It is not fundamentalistic. You're not going to territorialize it. It does not belong to you. It is knowledge, and you cannot bring the same old world, you know, paradigms of own and control into this area. You don't belong. Go and study. Go back to school, you know, and go back into the Orthodox world is my message to those people.
Yeah, I've noticed people always try to...
Information.
I notice people always, in our own, you know, quote, you know, awakening movement, you know, reality movement, whatever you want to call it, they always try to territorialize it about who said when 9/11 was going to happen first, or who discovered this, or who discovered that. And me, I'm always happy to have folks on, give them credit, but I do that almost neurotically just to please those that are keeping score on who came up with this or who thought of this first. I mean, I have trailblazed thousands of things, coined terms, but it means nothing to me. I'm hoping people use it. I'm hoping people expand on my knowledge as I expanded on others, stand on my shoulders as I stood on others. But you're right. There's this obsession with territorializing, and I've done the opposite. I've said, make copies of my films. Do whatever you want. Use my material.
Right.
Don't even give me credit.
You.
Because it's about survival. But again, people can wake up to the New World Order, but they haven't woken up to all the conditioning they were already under. And so they've got to break that as well.
Well, they're walking towards... See, the word utopia, if you actually look up the meaning of the word utopia as it was first meant to mean, it actually means no place. And this, of course, then opened up... This would not have been understood when Francis Bacon, you know, coined the term or used it. It certainly makes a lot of sense now because we have virtual kingdoms. We have cyber, you know, purgatories awaiting for us. We have these virtual reality states in which man, so divorced from his own center, so divorced from his own spirit, not only divorced but running headlong away in the opposite direction from his spirit, what do you think is waiting there for him? These, you know... These individuals are wanting to create a perfect social global village in which you can upload your own consciousness. So the internet is, you know, one aspect of this. It's not negative, but it's an extension of the cerebral spinal system, as many scholars have shown.
The point is, way they're engineering the technocracy is to dominate and subjugate and dumb down. So we're not demonizing technology one way or the other, but the architecture of it has been designed for bad. There is no doubting that, and we're being inserted into the false reality when our whole development is about this plane of existence, and we need to maintain that. We can certainly expand, but we need to maintain and expand our core, not give up our core of who we are to, quote, expand into something else, because that will destroy who we really are.
Right, and we often, because, again, of the misuse of terms, because of the media's complicity in all of this, we often think of technology as being nothing to do with spirituality. In fact, spirit and technology are two words for the same thing. If you go back in history, and you'll notice the emphasis of technology when it's used to write, to build pyramids, to feed the poor, you see, to irrigate great rivers. I mean, technology was in the hands of the most spiritual people in the past. It's been sequestered, it's been repackaged, it's been sort of territorialized and owned by those who are the darkest of powers. It doesn't belong to them. The great samurai, you know, the people who could make the great swords in the past, the great horsemen, or the great, you know, whatever, the musicians, the musicology, the creators of instruments. You know, all of this is technology, isn't it? So technology surrounds us as part of who we are. But it also has a spiritual component. It needs to be back
That's
in
right.
the hands of the people who are spiritual, not in the hands of these demonic people who are using it to, you know, destroy the humanity.
That's right. We are a species who envisions and then creates. We are a just magical species compared to everything else on this planet. As neat as dolphins are, they've got nothing on Homo sapiens sapien. And the enemy has to blunt and dumb down that creativity and get us focused off into issues of no significance. significance are brute, bestial, lower level, making that, you know, through the mammalian image, through the peer pressure to be that lower man instead of that higher man. And they claim that they are building a world for a higher man when the entire architecture is to destroy what man is and feed us into a technocratic meat grinder.
You got it. On the Michael Tesorian website, people will see an article there called Weapons of Mass Destruction Found, and it addresses this whole concept between the magic and the sorcery. I refer to what they're doing as sorcery, black sorcery. Basically, these people are possessed by a kind of archon, a demonic force that they serve, or you can look at it the other way, that they have basically uploaded their own consciousness into that place of fear, envy, endless greed, endless darkness. It doesn't matter which way you look at it. Either something's possessed them or they have uploaded their consciousness. What they've done is they've murdered their own spirit psychologically, and then by doing that, you allow this dark sorcery to enter into you. Well, you can look at it either way, but the sum result is the infected, the person who is that infected by that spiritual virus, cannot sit still. This is what the people of America and the world need to understand. That kind of infected person cannot sit still unless they go around and try to infect everybody else. The thing makes sense when you look
That's
at it
right.
from a psychological point
Faith
of view.
Faith without works is dead, and that goes for the dark side and the light side. I mean, people are going to manifest and build what their core is. And then notice the occultists at the higher levels want to make everybody low-level atheist and not believe any of that, so that blinds us. But at the top, the real top atheists in people are wild satanic Luciferians. So we're going to skip this break, too, behind the scenes at InfoWars.com. Michael, let's keep going because have you noticed and seen that the Theopic societies and the Blavatskyites and the OTO people, when you get up to high level folks like take Dr. Pianka, I keep talking about, he's in a Druid outfit. He says I love Lucifer on his website, on the official UT website. He names his bison bull Lucifer. When you really get around these guys, they are into the occult, but then to their classes and everybody, they're making fun of anybody who's religious, anybody who believes there's other dimensions, anybody who believes there's more to the world. They go, oh, you're not of reason. And I see that as shuttering people from whatever humans are and, you know, whatever this hunger for religion, you know, shuttering us down here so they can operate up here with, as you call it, you know, their sorcery, which is their mind control.
That's right. And many of these other organizations, you see, are like fraternal orders in which you have to pass through them in order to be matriculated to get into, you know, what I would say, like what we talked about in the first segment about the Atenists, the true story of Masonry. They're not just going to hand that down to anybody. So they put, from the school level onwards, through all of these various occult and other organizations, you see, they're like steps on the ladder. I mean, even the Masons use the symbol of the ladder. You have to die into what you knew. You have to die to the world that you knew. And I believe this is a kind of insanity, a form of insane insanity. And therefore, you have to sort of, they have a carrot and a stick approach in which you have to then matriculate until you are complicit and submissive enough so that they can then infect you with their infection. It's basically as simple as that. And until people strengthen themselves through knowledge, which is the only way to strengthen and have a spiritual connection to mm-hmm. something, you know, they're not going to be able to ward
well, you
off
talk
the
about,
infections of these diseased people.
You talk about psychic vampirism. There is
right.
no doubt that's what this New World Order is.
Big time. You know, we're doing DVDs. That's another DVD project we're doing. Right now, I believe that things are moving so fast that, you know, and there's, remember, as we said earlier, there's only so much of this knowledge that we study that people can handle. They're already balking and they're already, you know, covering their eyes and screaming to hide under the bed. Even with the sort of lower level stuff about the Illuminati and the, you know, the death of the Constitution, they can't even handle that, let alone things like psychic vampirism and war on consciousness. So, you know, I tend to pace my stuff out there because I realize that sometimes, you know, and this, of course, does not include everyone. There are people who are totally ready for this, but the masses of the world are not ready for this. So you have to sort of go slow and pace what you're creating and what you're writing about. You know, what you're putting out there, you can tell them a little bit about it because the human race is so unready for a lot of this. There is an awakening taking place, but it's also a very natal
situation. Well, I know this. I go off what my gut tells me. You know, I analyze the real world, what I can prove, but my gut tells me the human race is very, very old. The human race has incredible potential and is really going to go places if we can only move past this whole New World Order system. And
My main message in most of my work is to understand the nature of deconstruction, that moving forward is partly acquisitive and partly an active movement forward, but you also have to jettison. In anything that moves forward, anything that's going to progress, it also needs to shed skins. It also needs to jettison and deconstruct all the rubbish and all the miasma and all the webs, you see, of ignorance learning is a dual process. It requires you to clean, just like we have to wash our bodies when dust, you know, accumulates and dirt accumulates. We have to clean our cars, our homes, everything, the plates we eat off. And people sometimes have forgotten this in their search for the light. They also have to realize that there's a lot of parasites, a lot of sharks, a lot of mosquitoes, a lot of, you know, like we talked about earlier, a lot of darkness that comes around as you start moving towards the truth and towards the light. That's when the dirt is going to be shining up. That's when you're going to see the dirt for what it is. You can't say yuck and run away from it and hide. You got to know how to take out the right kind of detergent to deal with the dirt, be it psychic or social or anything else. And in my work, the basic message to everyone is you're not going to have legal, social, political sovereignty, or any solvency until you've got it mentally and spiritually.
All right, stay there, stay there, stay there. Here we go.
Documented. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I fell into a burning ring of fire.
You know, I take myself as a microcosm of a journey of awakening. Some people misinterpret what I'm doing as fear. No, fear would put people in their box in a catatonic state, in a fetal position, not moving forward. Why has Alex Jones, for all my foibles and problems, why have I been the most effective? And I think that's universally, you know, pretty much accepted even by my detractors on all fronts, is the most effective at waking people up. Well, it's because I reached out to the people of the United States and the world and taught them and showed them how much power they had and how much they could do to wake up others. And that's why it's you, the listeners, and the visitors of InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. So you judge a tree by its fruits. We have really resisted the New World Order, had a lot of victories against them, woken up a lot of people, and it's because I have passion, and I am aggressive, and I am angry, and I shake people out of the mesmerized position they're in with the TV and the culture to then just kind of like a cold bucket of water, ice water, wake them up and shake them out of that. And Michael Desari and David Icke, many others, have also been very, very successful at doing this. So what are your ideas of how to fight this technocracy? I mean, I want people to see how dangerous it is and know what a great threat it is so they will move out of the way of the threat and then over it and on top of it and you know, to denature it. I mean, what are your ideas of how this revolution of human, you know, consciousness, how this is going to play out, and what are your ideas in the solution?
Well, see, whatever you want to call it, God, nature has already given us the tools. It's called the human reason. It's called the human curiosity. This has built the greatest bridges. It has, you know, created the shuttle. It has built the greatest nations on earth. It's built pyramids. We already have the hardware within us installed, but what has happened is we've been conditioned to not use it, to doubt our own sensibilities, to doubt our own bodies, to doubt that we have control over our own lives and our own families and our own communities. And this has been this insipid drip feeding, you see, of the lie. I mean, I can back up and talk about what you just said there about being angry. You know, and first of all, I do not have a degree in psychology, but I have studied the subject thoroughly, and I can tell you that you, Alex, are neither mad nor paranoid, and that you are a person who's got the guts to stand up and be as mad as hell, who can channel their anger positively. And this is what is needed. Maybe go back to the movie Network. You got to be as mad as hell. You got to fall in love with the word no. You got to ask questions, and you got to do it with anyone else comes to help you do it or not. And this is very vital. You know, as I said, Ulster men from my country fought in the War of Independence. Now, this war to me is still going on, and people need to be armed up because something is shooting at us. Something is taking away that which is most precious, and therefore something has to be done. And you have to be as mad as hell, but you also have to channel that madness and that healthy anger and be armed up to fight this kind of tiger in the long grass. It is not something that's going to make itself known. You could easily shoot in the wrong direction, you see? So people need to be armed up with knowledge and education. And I will not stand in my life, you see, which is happening a lot, I see in the world that these people who come into this subject, either they're bandwagon hoppers, or like we said, they may be debunkers or whatever, or they may just be a bunch of intellectuals who try to come there, you know, with the same rules that they knew in the college and the university and the mainstream, jumping through the hoops, and then they come into this world and go, where's your qualifications, you know, what kind of books and DVDs have you written or done, you know, and they want to territorialize this knowledge and they want to make you jump through the hoops. And my message
See, I've always told, just like you do, the average person, take action, be a leader, you know, know, it can do incredible things. And the enemy hates that, that I tell people that they're empowered individually. They try to misquote me and misinterpret and claim that I'm saying that people don't have power. No, I'm saying you do have power. You do affect change. You can change the world around you.
Well, you see, back at one of the earliest mottos, one of the earliest mottos of the ancient Irish is very simple, and it said in Gaelic, but I'll in English, it is deeds to match words. And this is the fact, that here we are in a situation of colossal attack on the human race. We are literally dealing with the death of America, if we're not careful, you know, at least the death of the America that was known and built by the forefathers. And people are sitting there passively and twittering and howling and screeching about meaningless crap. They got to get up on their damn ass, is what I say. You know, people do exactly what you're doing. So I'm hoping that people will model themselves on you. You know, what happens when people watch, you know, what was the reality back in 1950s? You know, people like me in Britain, Alex, grew up watching the Humphrey Bogart, you know, movies, the Jimmy Cagney movies, when people in America looked you right in the eye and told you where to get off. What the hell happened? How did everything become so politically correct and so asinine?
Well, notice the mainstream media always tells us, be passive, don't be aggressive, don't stand up for yourself. But meanwhile, the government is aggressive and pushy towards us. They're letting us know
exactly.
They're the boss. Wow, Michael Dessarian is our guest. This is so important for the InfoWars streams. I'm going to skip this again, come back for everybody else in just 3 minutes. This is the one, the only GCN Radio Network, and MichaelDessarian.com is the website. I'll be a routine guest here on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, Michael, when we come back, I want to plug some of your books and videos for the full audience. But in the last 30 minutes when we come back, I've got to plug a few sponsors as well.
Yeah.
What are some of the final things you want to discuss?
Well, let's talk about I want to give people a heads up on the DVD that's coming out. It's actually a series. We're making like two or three in the series. It's going to be on technology and basically focusing on the future because, you know, there's one thing to critique what's been going on in the past. It's like my focus is now on where we're heading, and it's very much that this technology used wrongly is going to be one of the major clubs in the hand of the global elite.
Well, what's happening is incrementally, they are intensifying the poison in the shots, in the water, in the food, the frequency pollution, which they admit is really hurting people, the cell phones and the wireless and all of it. And I do see them gradually accelerating now, the gradual implementation of all of this. And I do see it all coming to a head in 2012 and beyond. I see that as the real kickoff of what they believe to be the final war between, you know, these two different forces. And, you know, I do believe in God, and I do believe that you know, we're going to come out of this on the end. The problem is I don't even like to use the term Christian because that has been so taken over and changed from what it really even means by the modern system and all the occultism and the steeples and Easter and the rest of it. It's not even recognizable.
All the paganism. Don't these Knights of Malta and everybody else go by the banner of Christianity? You know, and they're the least Christian. They're the least believing in Christ that any you could have imagined.
It's amazing. Well, when we come back, we'll get into the technocracy. Where you see things going? I mean, break down specifically the type of upheavals you think we're going to witness. How this whole economic banking takeover feeds into it as well, Michael. And there is so much on your site. How many documentaries or videos have you done?
Well, I've done one series of 22. There's a 6 DVDs, 22 discs in all. It's called the Origins and Oracles series. We've done that, and then there's several other stuff. That's the main six part DVD series. It's a long running series, 22 DVDs in all. It covers a lot of stuff.
Are you getting a lot of threats because you didn't even want us to say on air where you are?
Yeah, sure. Always. Absolutely. There's been a barrage of it since, in fact, last year. So we have to be very cautious, you know.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people have their places broken into. We've had stuff done to our vehicles over here. A lot of things I don't get into on air. But, man, the attacks are intensifying.
These people can prevent you traveling. They can fuck with you, you know, in many ways.
All right. Listen, it's a good thing we're not on the AM and FM dial right now. This is the U.S. This is actually on a lot of AM and FM stations, a lot of these little internet, which are very important shows, but, you know, they can get away with that. We can't do that, Michael. So be careful when we come back, even with the hells and dams. I'm not trying to censor you. I just that gives people an excuse not to listen to what you have to say. Okay, here we go, my friend. Here we go.
Day.
I'm going to take five phone calls for Michael Tesarian coming up in about 15 minutes. 1-800-259-9931. Specific questions for the guests. Pretty wide-ranging, so any topic goes. 1-800-259-9931. Before we go back to Michael, I wanted to tell you about a couple of our sponsors. One of them is Food Shortage USA. And no, this is not eFoodsDirect.com, the great folks that are our biggest sponsor for storable foods, so you're not dependent on the system. That's one of the biggest solutions is be self-sufficient, get more and more off their grid. Food Shortage USA teaches you how to inexpensively store food yourself. FoodShortage.com is the website, FoodShortage.com. Phase one, the insider's plan for one world government has been identified with the recent bailout. International bankers and power brokers have engineered the current crisis to create a new currency and a new world bank to act as a savior. And that's globally setting all the currencies at one price. That is a global currency. But we've only seen the beginning. The insiders have discovered that they must control two things to seize total power. One is the world currency, which are currently being prepared to accept, and the other is food. We're witnessing the engineered financial crisis, folks. Don't wait until it's too late. Go to foodshortageusa.com to learn how to make your own storable foods for you and your family to prepare for the road ahead. The website reveals a step-by-step way for the average person to get prepared for what's ahead. FoodShortageUSA.com or 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Great information. And folks, the thing here is it's not that we're in fear. We know the food prices are going up. We know there's food shortages worldwide from Iceland to Africa. I mean, it's all over. We know they're artificially doing this. They're talking about depression. It's good to be self-sufficient. We're empowered. You know, we see a threat, we prepare for it. Okay, it's that simple. Also, another great sponsor is NewVitality.com, an old, established, high-quality vitamin and mineral company that Codex Alimentarius is trying to block. They don't have any magic cures or miracle stuff. What they have is just high-quality minerals and vitamins and things that are known to have good health effects, like aloes, colon, and body cleanse. It's 30 different herbs. It's super concentrated aloe vera, well-known to detoxify and flush out your guts, 800-569-4056. They have super beta prostate, just very well documented. Saw palmetto and other things that are in it, a whole bunch of herbs that are known to shrink the prostate, make it a lot healthier. Every male over 45 should be taking this. Just one ingredient, saw palmetto, is recommended by a lot of medical doctors. So the plants we have, 1-800-569-4056, 1-800-569-4056, or newvitality.com. If you forget that banner, there's a link up on InfoWars.com. Okay, going back to Michael Tesarian, michaeltesarian.com. Michael, I want to go to some calls here in about 10 minutes or so, but continue with the technological control grid. And you talk about them clamping down the next 3 years or so. Really, I mean, people think we've already seen an intensification of operations by the globalists. You're talking about, you know, really intensifying things. Break that down for us.
Well, these are people who've always thought of man as some sort of golem. You know the story of the golem? And even coming out of the New Age movement, all this stuff about the grays, you know, I believe that that's been infiltrated, and a lot of that is disinformation. In order to, you know, prepare us to be not only afraid, of course, of some sort of off-world invasion. That's, you know, that is science fiction, but it works well to prepare people for what's coming. But basically, when you start reading the certain schools of Bertrand Russell's and these kinds of people, and these other maniacs that I deal with in, you know, my work, throughout my books and DVDs, these individuals literally do think of themselves as some sort of robotic, mechanical beings, and nothing could be. Their greatest pipe dreams, you see, is to make a completely controllable human being. I actually believe that for ritual purposes, certain segments of these illumined ones, so-called, wanted to completely devastate and wipe out the human race a long time ago. And that another quadrant, another, you know, section or cadre sort of, you know, frowned upon that in the past and didn't want that and came up with the idea that, look, to make the perfect robot, all we got to do is dumb down the people of the world to the level of the robot, to the level of the cyborg, and the job is done. And that's basically where we're at. That's where we've been up until now. Now they have restored the technology. Because remember, these people arm themselves to the teeth with not only knowledge, but occult knowledge. And so that what I am not a person who's a Luddite. I am all for technology. But I do not want technology in the hands of occultists who are working from, you know, occult knowledge and then arming themselves with this technology. This is the problem. And this is also a message to those who are working in these technological sort of enclaves. They got to be aware of this and research this to find out about the occult ideologies that are behind these technical orgs and behind some of these, you know, people's champions within the Genome Project and with some of these materialist philosophers and scientists who are just itching to create the global village. And that, through the electronics, through the technologies, through the cybernetics, you see. And this is actually an old story. People who are familiar with the work I did in my Atlantis book knows that this is a very old story, that these cybernetics and cryogenics and the genetic manipulation is not something new. It's just that they've had to build back the technology at a record pace now, you know, in the chronology of time. And they're succeeding to do this. And that is why I believe they have postponed certain other events, because they wanted the tunnel vision on this particular thing. It's backed up by the work of Jim Keith and these people that I've been mentioning a lot here. And we've got to realize, you see, that this is coming down. It's not just with arming the police with super weapons. It's not just putting the, you know, HARP technology and microwave technology, installing that on the satellites so that they have a complete police state global village situation in which no nation or no person can operate independently, you see. And then they troubleshoot this, they check it out in the terrestrial wars that are going on the planet. These black operations that have been exposed.
Yeah, they call them laboratories. They call it a laboratory. They call a war a laboratory.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. So they want this particular being, you know, magnetized, vaccinated, you know, injected and completely, you know, digitized so that they can then control every aspect of what you're doing.
Here's one microcosm. Here's one microcosm example. The GMO milk, the GMO food, the plastics, and there's hundreds of types of plastics they pick for worldwide distribution, over 90% of the plastic cups. The one type of plastic that sheds the estrogen-mimicking hormones, it's a documented fact. They chose it 40 years ago for that reason. That's come out. And then 3-year-old girls, 4-year-old girls by the tens of thousands, by the millions at 7, 8, 9, are going into puberty early. Then they get breast cancer early. You know, they get sick early. And then they know all that. And when they go to the doctor, they don't say quit drinking GMO milk. They don't say quit drinking out of plastic. They say, oh, we're going to give you hardcore, complex hormonal injections that then suppress that, but then also give you Cushing's disease and fry all your glands. And so, again, they engineer that. The local doctor's compartmentalized. He doesn't know. And they give the little girl something that's far worse. Meanwhile, our boys are in so much estrogen that now they've got 10, 12, 14, 15-year-old boys whose testicles haven't dropped. And I hate to get technical, but they're like ovaries. They're still inside the body. When normally, you know, testicles should drop when you're about 8 and 9, right before you go into puberty at 12. I mean, they are attacking us. The frogs, the fish off the water we drink are now becoming sterile in mass. I mean, we are on – this is scientific. We have the sperm count down 75% in the Western world, 85% in many areas. I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it goes to this whole idea of the heart of tyranny, the origin of tyranny, and that the human race is their chattel to do with as they feel like. And they don't want disgruntled people. They want a totally pacified, you know, and dumbed down individual that they can completely own. And you see, they know that they also never sit quiet. They know that there is an awakening taking place. So these guys just don't let that happen. They have to also, you know, arm themselves to react against the awakening that there's.
Well, I had one of them on earlier where they're going to put all these satellite trackers in all the cars to Texas, and from a government study, and he was going, it's okay. It's not coming for a long time. It may not even happen. This is good for you. I mean, and it's always the same script.
It's always the same script, and I tie it into the awakening. You know, I said this in one of my talks, it's entitled The Origins of Evil, and in the first 10 minutes of that talk, I said that, look, as the human child starts to awaken and tries to gain back his spirit, that is exactly at the point where the monster, the vampire, comes in. They're waiting there to infuse you with more, you know, toxicity so that you again fall into your...
But see, that's it. They want you to fall into the sleep, and that's why you're effective, why I'm effective. We're shaking them, going, no, wake up. Don't even believe me. Just you're being manipulated by Madison Avenue, by the culture, by the propaganda, and if you can't even admit that when it's admitted, there's much more advanced things. We're shocking them, saying you need to realize what's going on. There needs to be that urgency for people to get out. You know, like, I knew cell phones were frying my brain, but I kept using them. I finally got to where I check my messages about once a day on it. I keep it far away from me. My wife isn't using hers anymore. We're living without it. It tracks us. It hurts us. You know, I could break my habit. We can all do this, and it takes the urgency, Michael.
Yeah, but when you have a media that turns around and shows you Bill Gates' wife is, you know, injecting her dog with a microchip, and then suddenly it's not the dog anymore, it's the children, just like you showed on Road to Tyranny. You had that stupid, gormless L.A. family who goes, this is just wonderful, I can't wait. You know, it's going to save abduction, it's going to save a kidnapping, or it's going to save your dog. You know, the human race is dumb enough to be turning and going, yeah, I want one too, where can I get it? You know,
by the way, it turns out that was all fake, and the family worked for Applied Digital Solution, an IBM front directorate, and then magically members of the family started dying.
How about that? Well, this is the casualty list. They never publicized that about all the, like they said, with the estrogen that they're pumping into the girls, and then these court cases that then are backed up because there's been so much, you know, reactions in these children and these young people. I'm very concerned about this whole medicated child bit. I do a lot of work on that and a lot of research.
But see,
on that.
That's what the HPV is, a live cancer virus. It's killing a bunch of people, maiming tens of thousands, and they knew it would do that. They rolled it out as a test of how to cover it up, how to suppress it, how to have these soft kill weapons being openly used out in the public and testing how to compartmentalize it and cover it up.
And they tried on different populations of the world. Remember, not one type of virus is not going to work well on different kinds of nations, different kinds of people. I can tell you, you know, and I'm talking to the choir, I know you know this, that from the AIDS virus down, from the bird flus and from all of this other stuff, these are rehearsals for the worldwide plague.
They're testing how soft kills move. Go ahead, absolutely right.
Yeah, they're ready to unleash a global plague. You know, the science fiction writers have already written about it and tried to warn people. And this is the perfect way, through food. It's through food. There's an old statement that says that people are three meals away from revolution. This was brought out in movies like 3 Days of the Condor. Some people have used it in the context of oil. But oil is a hell of a lot less important than the food, you know, sort of Damocles that these people are going to use, because they're sequestering the organic seeds now, just like in some sort of hideous, you know, Noah's Ark experiment. We've got the facts on this. We've got the proof on this. They're working overtime on it.
Well, James Bond was Ian Fleming, OSS, and then MI6, and they love to throw it in your face. And every one of those movies, later, some manifestation of reality would then be shown. And remember Moonraker, where the global elitists want to kill everybody and then repopulate the Earth.
That's right. All the way from the first one, you know, the Her Majesty's Secret Service, all the way up to the Moonraker. You're right. They're whistleblowing this through the films. They want to tell. Because remember, this is a ritual situation. You need to tell the sacrificial goat what on earth is happening
here. That's the lesser magic.
Like
That's the lesser magic. They have to do that first, yeah.
I totally agree with this, and that's what basically our job is. Our job is not to territorialize knowledge, not to jump through hoops, but to try and collate a lot of this information, present it for people, you know, in an unbiased way.
And the enemy are in their own prison. They are habitualized. They are very obsessive compulsive. They do everything the same over and over again. I think that's their weakness, Michael.
Well, right. Remember earlier on you said that there's something wrong with them? There's something sort of inhuman about them? This, I believe, ties into an experimentation that happened in ancient times in which certain beings were created. These are the world rulers today. And they don't even have what we would refer to as spirit or soul. So we've got to understand that we're talking about people here who are, you know, connected to sorcery and to dynastic concerns that have sworn themselves to this kind of control for years. They look at us like some people look at the pets, like the laboratory, you know, doctor looks at the rats in the maze. That is exactly how the human race is to them, and it's something that needs to be controlled, and there's not in their mind any question about it. That's the way it has to go, because they look at us as untidy, unruly, you know, they look at us as just like cannon fodder. They always have done. And people need to understand that the movement of imperialism, the movement of tyranny, involves this invasion of our particular biological sovereignty and our mental and spiritual sovereignty just as much as it does working on a legal political sphere of action. People tend to focus on that. You know, what's happening now is I hope that people can start to see the spiritual components of this and realize that there is an occult war taking place, and it's on everything that is good.
Well, the bottom line is, folks, you can believe us or not, but war is being waged against you by the technocratic elite. Whether it's real or not, they're all into the occult. They believe into it. You know, they believe what they're saying. What Michael's telling you is true. I mean, I don't know how true it is in facts, but they believe it. They believe they're another species, and they believe your baby is a piece of crap that needs to be killed. And they're coming for us. They're already attacking us. They brainwashed the cops, the military. They brainwashed. A lot of them are waking up. We didn't make it this way. Everything we've told you has come true so far. We're telling you it's going to get a lot more crazy, and you better realize this is life and death. Let's take some calls. Mick in Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Michael Tesarian.
Thank you very much. I'm, in an effort to be for speed, I'm going to kind of babble quick. It seems like the controlled media is the most useful tool in their toolbox, and if we could, do you think there's any way you could possibly, we have to come up some way to break up that monopoly, perhaps through the use of their own fairness doctrine, because we don't have much, like,
yeah, but they're going to selectively enforce that and use that to shut me down. That's all. That was always selectively used. We need to intensify the web, not let them take it over, not take it for granted while we still have it right now. Just each of you individually waking up, friends and neighbors and family, is an unstoppable force. There are leaders out there listening right now that will dwarf what Michael Tesarian, Alex Jones, and many others have done. Okay, you just have to start the fight, start the battle, and that will lead you into just amazing opportunities.
Oh, thank you. And just real quick, in all his research, this Israeli identity message of the European races actually being the supposedly lost tribes of Israel.
Yes, that goes back to what I said earlier.
Also.
Yeah, let me get Michael to comment, but let me just comment. We told you the Queen of England is coronated on, the Stone of Jacob, where supposedly... Abraham was going to sacrifice him, and so, yes, they believe that... This goes back to the Merovingian line. You want to explain this?
Well, you're totally right. I was just going to say that we are in the hands of people who are dynastically linked to these Merovingians, who themselves, their ancestry goes all the way back into Egypt. And, Mick, you know, if you pick up my book on the Irish origins of civilization, you'll have an enlightening experience, because, you see, when people like yourself ask questions like this, it's very important to identify the terms. Who are the 12 tribes of Israel? Who are the lost tribes of Israel? What we got to do is analyze those very terms and find out who are we really talking about, because the image that's been presented to us from official sources is not even the true image. That's a made-for-TV, made-for-the-history books, sort of a description of who these people actually are. That's like a sort of a dance on a theater, but you got to understand those are actors. What lies behind
there's
that?
The real tribes, real? And then there's the counterfeit.
You bet, yeah. And we've been handed the counterfeit. The time has come now to look behind the passion play and find out who is really operating behind these sort of, as you say, the lost tribes. You know, it's a fascinating story of who the real Jews are, who the real Judaics are. We're using those terms as has been handed down to us from the establishment. They're not even the correct terms. So often when we're bandying terms around like this, we're not even using them as their true occult definition. This is the biggest problem. What does a Jew, the word, mean to a Freemason is a totally different meaning of that word than it is to, say, the layman on the streets, you see. So the definition of terms is a research, is a time to study, to find out, first of all, we're not even using the right definition.
All right, Michael Tesarian, final segment coming up. More of your phone calls straight ahead. Stay with us. We're going to skip this break.
More than seven.
Okay, I'm going to go back to calls right now. Let's talk to Michael in Texas. You're on the air. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Alex?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Michael, I sure appreciate the work you do, too. Since the beginning of these thought forms of this oligarchy, as you said earlier, around 1500 B.C., the civilizations that have followed... The reason why they've been able to continue this is we've never been able to rise above their low-level vibration, and that they so cleverly sustained through their rituals that you were speaking about a while ago. My question is, how do we go about addressing that and those rituals? I mean, is it something that we can do through our own meditations for instance, govern the world with golden light, so as
well. See, I don't get into all the New Age stuff, and I appreciate your call. I'm going to let Michael comment on that. This is action. This is action. This is in the streets. I mean, let's say you're spiritually awake and alive. It is going to physically manifest. Look at India, where they're all filling it with golden light, and it's a hellhole. Now, I don't know if Michael agrees with that, but Michael, you want to comment?
Yeah, I do agree with that, because what we have to understand, Michael, is that there is a two-pronged approach to this. You first have to secure your own spiritual and your own moral and your own mental sovereignty. And that, remember, is different for every person. That's why I do not, subscribe to A to Z, fix-all, one-size-fits-all, systems here. This is a very individualistic study. It's an individualistic work. You have to use deconstructive models just as much as you have to have constructive models. You have to study your enemy to know what weapons they're using and how they're employing it. And it very much starts... See, I never separate any of this that we're talking about from spiritual activity. It is all part of our...
Yeah, let me make a point activity. Here. Let me make a point and get your take on it, Michael. Whenever I'm threatened by the New World Order, whenever things seem dark, I can not even look at my own children, other people's children, innocence, goodness, beauty, a green field, the sky, the stars... And I know I'm part of something bigger, and I'm not trying to grasp and hold and be greedy, even with my own life. And then with that, a great peace comes over me, and I realize that I'm on the path of goodness and righteousness, not that I'm perfect, and so there's no more fear, but it's the willingness to fight. People say, oh, just don't be scared, go along with it. That's the ultimate form of surrender to evil. No, it is because I have love and because I don't have fear that I do stand up against evil. Do you see the point I'm making?
I see it perfectly, and we owe a debt to all those individuals of the past. This is one of my strong motives, is that we owe a debt to all those people, all those children, even of our own family lines, who suffered in the mines, who suffered in the factories, who lost hands, who were maimed, who starved, who fought.
Stay
who
there. Start the- over. We got to come back to the full audience. Here we go. Man, I would go into overdrive right now, but I've got to tape an interview with Tex Mars, myself, for his show, right when the show ends. I was on Man Cow this morning. They say no rest for the wicked. I'm not very wicked. I don't get very much rest. It's kind of the opposite. Michael Desarian, I was bringing up standing up against evil, how that is empowering, how once you just love humanity, that I think that's a big part of the solution. Just that mindset and idea, that truly turns loose of the fear, and then that empowers you, and you were making a key point.
Well, see, Michael needs to come to understand that before you can help another person, you must be strong in yourself. And then from your model, pretty much like Alex, what you are a walking example of, is by your model... People have the egalitarian right then to either do as you do or not to do as you do. You know, you can't force anything down people's throats.
It's the example. It's the standard.
It's the exactly. And people who are sovereign within, who've understood that they can find their center, they can find their own inner truth. And as I said, that's not one size fits all. It is not going to work on a social level where, you know, because again, that's regimentation. That's the fascist model, is one size fits all for all people, as we say, as we do, not as we act. So the most important thing is to realize that, yeah, you got to go within yourself into the sanctity and the kingdom of your own being, and find your own center. And then from that place, in a total state of fearlessness and passion, take on the rival or the adversary, you know. And like I often say in my work, when you are so strong, I mean, this is pretty much borrowed from martial arts, when you are so inherently strong that your enemy cannot destroy you, then your enemy has lost. You can't go after them using the tools that they've provided for you. You can't enter into this duel with the swords and the guns that they have primed and offered you. That has been tried in the past centuries, and it hasn't worked. We have not been overcome this tyrant, this Leviathan, for the reasons that you mentioned, because we've not been able to break the spell of their particular kind of sorcery. That's absolutely right.
But, sir, also, you were bringing up before the break when we were coming out, I want the full audience to hear it, about we owe it to our ancestors and the enslavement they went through. Finish that point.
Well, this is what my particular motive is that even if a person is not humanitarian enough, Alex, to do it for the rest of humanity, that's all right. Do it at least for the dead within your own family, the mothers, the grandparents, the grandfathers, the ancestors who died on the fields, who plowed, who suffered, who was murdered in wars, wars of ritual, wars of blood, right? These are your own ancestors. For goodness sake, people should be motivated to do it for your own lineage, the people who cried into the night saying, why is this happening to us? Why are we living in this much of abject poverty? Why are our sons and daughters dying on the fields of these tyrants?
Yeah.
So we should be motivated just by that, even
the
if we don't care.
The incredible sorrow, the glee the enemy had at ripping babies apart and enslaving,
yeah.
and the nobles loving the people, starving beneath them. The raw enjoyment of depriving people. I can't imagine that, but that's the enemy's soul. They love greed. They love hurting you. They love dominance. They are control freaks.
And they can't wait to find another more innocent, just like the 20 million Inca that were killed in South America, or the Irish genocide, or the South African genocides, you see, or the opening of the British East India Company and the terrible degradation they did in India. They want to subjugate the entire world. They're trying it now over there in Iraq and Iran. You see, they don't look at you as an Iranian or if you read their own works, if people go to their own works and go to the works of these people like the Albert Pike,
they look
the world,
at you as cattle, as an animal, as an insect that is to be eradicated, and their religion is viciously tearing you apart.
That's right. I mean, how many jugglers can you fit into one room? It doesn't matter, you see, who juggles what ball, Islamic, Judaic, Christian, conservative, labor. That is all for the juggling act of the world. It doesn't mean a thing to these people. They just look at you as basically fodder that can be ritually murdered whenever the time or the particular astrological conjunctions take place when they need to sacrifice your ass to their cause on the
all right, Michael Desarian,
the altars of their sacrifice.
Michael Desarian, I apologize to Chris, Robert, and others. Call me back tomorrow. I'll get to you first, or call back next time Michael Desarian's on. Michael, let me set you up in the next few weeks for a part two, okay?
Well, we're going to release our DVD, and I'll make sure you get one, and we can talk about that.
All right, God bless you. Take care. Let me say bye to you when the show ends in just a moment. Everybody, retransmission with key economic analysis and news starts now on the Internet Refeed, one place, InfoWars.com.